Okay, welcome to Signal of Doom, episode 18. I'm here with my main man, Stu, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How have you been this week?
I'm pumped up, brother.
Oh, Spider-Man's finally here.
It's coursing through my veins. I'm bouncing off walls, man. Oh,
thank you. Finally,
Whipping
Marvel.
Around. It has been a long wait, hasn't it?
It feels like it's been a really long wait.
I feel like I've been waiting
for this. Ever since Civil War, yeah. We've just been pumped for Spidey.
Ever since Civil War, I've been in this state of anticipation.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally today released. I've just seen it. I've come screaming out of the cinema. Rushed home. The signal was shining bright in the sky. And I'm ready to record. Now, Stu, episode 18. By the way, that's one more than my highest score in cricket. I had a 17 on that was my highest score in cricket ever. Now, 18 episodes in, man.
8 episodes, isn't it? That's the second mention of that story. Well done, Dave. That's a solid average.
I do like to mention. I'll tell you what, rarely has a cricket innings been so dissected as that 17 not out that I've scored. I could take people right through it from beginning to end.
And trust me, we've heard this, and it's not worth it.
Speak for yourself, mate. Did I tell you I got caught at slip? Got caught at slip off the spinner, and they didn't give me out. I didn't walk.
I did hear this.
And got abused by the other fielders?
I think everyone's heard this.
That's my favourite part of the story.
Yeah.
It was spinning that much off a concrete pitch that the ump thought it had spun all the way to first slip. I'd actually given a little bit of a nick along the way. Didn't walk, mate. Didn't even think of walking.
The story gets better every time I hear it, Dave.
Yep. Anyway, turning away from that story, because I think that's a whole separate podcast that I could do about our innings.
Let me know how it goes. I won't be there for that episode.
It'll have one listener, me.
Yeah.
Definitely not my girlfriend, who's actively boycotted the story many times.
She has, yeah.
Now, anyway, Stu, the first thing I want to say, like, at the top of the show, and I think this is really important, rest in peace to Joan Lee, Stan Lee's wife, who passed away today at age 93.
Yeah, it's a big loss.
It's a huge loss.
She's been there with Stan Lee since the very, very beginning.
They married in, I believe, 1947.
Yeah,
I mean, amazing. Jesus Christ, like, that's a long haul. Like, that's an impressive period of time to be with someone.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a very impressive haul.
And, Stu, I only found this out today. The legend goes, and take it for what it's worth, but the legend was that Stan was going to leave Marvel before they were doing comics, like superhero comics.
Well, this was back at Timely.
Timely Comics, yeah.
Yeah.
And he'd been there a fair period of time, and he was going to quit, and she encouraged him to write a comic he was really proud of before he quit.
Yeah.
And Fantastic Four.
Yeah, exactly. At the time, they were famous for romance comics and also westerns. They did a lot of cowboy and Indian type stories. And it wasn't what Stan was loving.
Stan always wanted to be a novelist.
He always wanted to do something a little more than these little 15-page romance novels.
Yeah, yeah.
It fits that Joan was the one encouraging him to do what he wanted to do.
And I buy that, man. I mean, the partner push is so the boundaries. The partner is so important. Like, you know, they often say, like, you know, the power behind the throne. So rest in peace to her. I mean, and you know, and our thoughts and prayers to Stanley himself, you know, who's not far away from 91 himself, or he must be about 91. If she was 93, he's up there.
Mm.
I tell you what, man, I mean, yeah, he can't be in a good place. I tell you what, I'm always amazed with Stan. He still, even though he's so old, he still holds it together. He's doing better than I would at 91.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, like seriously.
Yeah. And he's got another brilliant cameo.
Exactly.
Spider-Man, yeah. as with every Marvel movie.
Thank God he has that too, because I always think that adds a little bit extra, you know?
I'm always happy to see Stan Lee show up in these movies.
Me too. And I mean, out of all of them, Spider-Man really is well and truly his baby, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's his number one character. Like, yeah, he loves Spidey. Out of all the characters.
It's not his favourite character. Like, he's on record as saying that Silver Surfer is his
really
favourite character of all time, which I
love. Wow. I've thought he'd been on record as saying Spidey was his favourite, but it's hard to keep a track with Stan. I didn't know that.
Spider-Man's kind of his first and his biggest.
Yeah. He loves Spidey.
He loves Spidey, no doubt. But yeah.
I saw a really interesting interview that I was going to link, actually, to Signal of Doom Facebook page. It's Stan at about 77. Being interviewed by this woman in America, like a TV show, and he's so funny. He's talking about how they trolled Marvel, trolled DC back in the day because DC were trying to replicate them after their sales success.
Yep.
And you see Stan in the 70s, man, where he's got the glasses on. He's a cool guy, and he's just there, and he's just funny. It's like Stan now, but he's a lot younger. But he's about 50 something. There, he's not a spring chicken, and he's funny, man. He makes you laugh. Like, he's always got that confidence about him.
Yeah.
He's a salesman at the end of the day. That's what Stan Lee is. He's a great, great salesman.
Absolutely.
You know?
And he's a storyteller.
He's a storyteller. Oh, I absolutely love him. Now, Stu, we've obviously got... We're going to start off the show with a non-spoiler review of Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, very quick non-spoiler review.
Just give our general thoughts.
If you haven't seen it, stick around.
Yeah, we won't spoil anything.
We're not going to ruin the thing for you.
Stu's got me on a tight leash.
We don't want any
petty mistakes. We don't want any mistakes.
Any mistakes, we're starting this thing over.
And, okay, so, Stu, turning to it, I'm coming out of it. I mean, I'm all positives. I'm giving it 9.5 out of 10, and I'm saying a very strong lead performance, a strong supporting cast performance, a great villain turn by Michael Keaton, and the story just pulsed along very nicely.
Yeah, the pacing was brilliant. We know from the trailers the main three characters.
Yep.
In Spidey, in Vulture, and in Iron Man, and all three are brilliant performances.
Well represented.
Well represented.
And it's not a spoiler to say Happy Hogan is very good as well.
Happy Hogan's great. Happy Hogan's great. always
great. Yeah, he's always good. We always love John Favreau.
So, yeah, that was really good. The movie paced really well. It moves really quickly.
Yep.
And the other thing that I would say is the supporting cast, the spattering of characters all throughout this movie have all been done well.
A lot of them young actors.
Exactly. Like Peter's school friends.
Yep.
There really aren't any major problems in this movie.
There's
at all.
Nothing where you're going, this is a misstep, this is a mistake. It really flows, as many Marvel movies do, but this, I think, had a bit of extra in it. I think they give this an extra push.
Yeah.
This had a real sheen to it.
This movie is great if you're a comic book fan. It's great if you're a newbie, though. If you've never seen anything else...
You could walk in and enjoy this.
Yeah, you don't need to see any other Marvel movies to really be able to enjoy this one.
No, definitely not.
You don't need to see Civil War. You don't need to see Tom Holland's first performance.
Have seen them, it adds to it.
Oh, if you get it, there's little Easter eggs throughout. There's lines that get thrown away if you miss it.
Yep.
It's a fantastic movie.
Can I ask you this question, Stu? Because where do you rank it in your Marvel movies? Because it's right up there for me. It's right up there in the mix, man.
For me, it would be top five, maybe.
Oh, it's definitely top five. For me, it could even be top three. For me, I always think Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier is arguably critically the best movie.
Yeah.
I think Avengers number one would be up there as well for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because I think I always have a fanboy moment when I see them all coming together for the first
time.
It's
very good.
That was really cool. And I think Guardians 1 is right up there for me as well.
Yeah. See, I'd take this over Guardians 1. But that's because I'm a Spider-Man fan through and through. I bleed Spider-Man, so...
Yeah.
But I think be argued that the other one is good too.
Yeah, and I also think for me, Civil War, I really enjoyed.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And then maybe this one will come in at five for me. Okay.
But that's a strong top five.
Oh, considering
that's a great batting lineup.
20-odd movies that we've got to look at.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a really good...
Take a seat on the bench, Iron Man 2. You know?
Yeah, Iron Man 1 is my favourite of the three Iron Man movies.
Oh, gee, for me, Iron Man 3, dude. I love Iron Man 3.
No, there's so many problems with Iron Man 3. I can't get behind it.
There's no problems. It's not long enough for me. I love Iron Man 3.
Oh, there's so many problems with that movie.
What don't you like about Iron Man 3?
You traitor. Everything except Iron Man.
Well,
the whole relationship with Pepper Potts.
I dug that.
The whole him losing the Iron Man thing at the end, where he loses his chest piece.
What happens? Where he gets it removed.
Yeah.
That was open heart surgery, buddy. That took courage.
Yeah, and he also lost his chest piece, which made him Iron Man.
I mean, I don't really remember.
The Mandarin was just a god-awful misstep. That villain is better off.
Well, it's in my top three, Stu, so we will agree to disagree, my friend. I mean,
Iron Man 3 is in my bottom three.
Stu and I, by the way, we came through 9.5 out of 10, so we've agreed early on something here. 9.5 out of 10 from both of us on Spider-Man Homecoming, yeah?
Yeah. I'll happily agree with you on that one.
Okay. On my nose is up in the air about Iron Man 3, because I love it. I've watched it so many times. It's one of those movies that I always try to get Michelle to watch. I've probably watched it 15 times.
Wow.
I think it's great. I love it.
I think you've been, like, numbed.
I fucking love it, man. I just dig it. I don't even understand what the problem is with it. Like,
the problem is the villain, the story, the supporting cast.
Oh, you didn't like that the villain was Ben Kingsley's, like a druggie sort of thing. He's not a real villain. He's the pawn of someone else.
I hated the idea that the Mandarin wasn't a real villain. Because the Mandarin is a fantastic villain.
Who is the real villain? It's Guy Pearce.
Is Guy Pearce's
yeah.
Kilrich.
I always found Guy Pearce a bit annoying in that movie.
Who wasn't a good actor and at some point just breathed fire, because why not?
Well, I took that from Extremis. I mean, Extremis, the Warren Ellis storyline.
Yeah, which does it so much better than this movie ever did.
Yeah, well, look, I enjoyed it, but I thought that movie had a lot of bits and pieces. I liked the post-traumatic stress disorder of Tony Stark. I thought they handled that well. And the kid and stuff, like some sequences with the kid when he was leaving the kid and everything.
Oh, the kid. That movie was not good.
I felt it, man. I felt
that movie wasn't good.
You're a hollow man over there. You can't tell me it's not good. It made a lot of money. It was critically well received, other than The Mandarin, which got a bit of online heat.
I'm sorry, but it was one of the worst critically received movies that Marvel's ever had.
Whatever,
it
man.
It was not critically well received.
Not in this household. It financially did fantastic numbers.
Financially, every Marvel movie has done fantastic numbers.
Yeah, some more so than others.
But, yeah, true. This would still be my bottom three critically, though, easily.
Really? Okay. Well,
easily.
I often think, though, and get away from this, because, okay, we'll agree to disagree, because the two halves will never meet. But, I mean, there's not a lot of weak Marvel movies, is there? I often think that. Like, there's ones I prefer a lot more than others, but I don't find too many that I find really weak.
Hulk, I found weak. Incredible Hulk.
Oh, yeah, in comparison to the rest, for sure. Yes.
I thought that was
with Ed Norton.
Bad. Norton, yeah. Yeah,
Ed Norton, yeah, playing Bruce Banner, yeah.
That was a bit of
that feels like about. Doesn't that feel like about 40 years ago, though?
I know, right?
It just feels. That movie's been forgotten for a reason, I think. Yeah. And I mean, you could argue, say, Thor 1 or something, but I still enjoyed it. There's not too many bad movies, though, they do. Like, I'm not that interested in Ant-Man at all as a character, or even Doctor Strange, but both of them are pretty effective movies.
They were fun. They were great. Yeah. Ant-Man especially I thought was a really fun little movie.
I would take Ant-Man over, like, Doctor Strange. I've got, like, zero interest in Strange. Like,
I love Doctor Strange. I'm a big Doctor Strange fan.
Yeah, but see, I'm the opposite. But I enjoyed the movie. But Ant-Man, I mean, I've got, like, no interest in Ant-Man. And yet I really dug that film. I thought it was a really entertaining movie.
For sure,
you know.
Yeah.
Look, Marvel do a really good job. It's pretty good when you can compare. Your weaker movies are still pretty damn good, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, so anyway, so on this we've agreed, we've got a 9.5, lock it in. And Stu, correct me if I'm wrong, but we're now going to segue into our spoiler review.
Yes.
Am I right?
Yeah. So if you don't want any spoilers, and if you haven't seen it yet, go out and see it. Don't
definitely go see it. Yeah.
Right now.
Don't listen to our spoiler review, because I bounce all over the place. I think I ruined the spoiler at the end, like in the first sentence of the review. So,
I think so, yeah.
So,
yeah. Serious spoiler review.
Yeah, it's like I'm determined to spoil it. Yeah. Like, you know, like, so
I've just been waiting to spoil this for someone for so long.
Go see it. I've only just seen it.
Yeah.
So go see it.
Come back.
Come back. The review goes
if you have. If you just don't want to see it, skip the next 51 minutes.
Or if you don't care, if you don't want to see it, I guess you can still listen. If you don't want to see Spider-Man Homecoming, you could listen to a spoiler review.
You could.
For the comedy.
Why not?
Like, why not? Like, you're invested in the partnership of the signal. If you're this kind of weird person who doesn't want to see Spider-Man Homecoming, firstly, re-examine your life. Secondly, you could listen to the spoiler review, because maybe with the spoilers, you could be shocked into thinking, I need this in my life.
I would skip it. If it was me, I would skip it.
Or you could skip it.
I would skip it.
Okay, well, anyway, it goes for roughly 51 minutes. So from this part of my conversation, skip forward 51 minutes.
Skip forward 51. We'll see you on the other side.
Okay, Stu, so turning to Spider-Man Homecoming, our spoiler review.
So everything's coming out. No holds barred in the spoiler review.
This is it. Like, this kids, it. Strap in, buckle in. I don't want any letters of complaint. You've had your warnings. I've sounded the alarm. This is me and Stu going at it. I'm fresh off at Stu, aren't I? I jetted. They flew me in. I've come in from the copter, from the cinema, deposited in the house, run in. Stu's already been there. I've just almost tagged Stu as I run in, and it's just straight into it.
Strolled in less than an hour ago, just straight from it. He's ready to go.
Got my Spider-Man shirt on. I had the cap on in the theater too. I was kind of incognito, man. Like, I was a man of mystery. And then, by the way, the guy stole my seat in the cinema. That's the first thing. And it was only the fact that I wanted to do some sort of Punisher justice, okay? but
here,
see,
we go.
Michelle does that. I don't. I don't like the confrontation in a theater. I think it can end ugly. He had his girlfriend with him. So I'm like, you had to take G15, didn't you? Out of all the seats, you had to take mine.
Is that your seat?
Yeah, it was.
That's always your seat?
No, but it's right in the centre, and that was one I had. And as I'm approaching it, I'm like, I can see this is going to be a situation. I can see him and his girlfriend are, like, parked together. And then I sat down, I thought, I know someone's going to come. And guess what happened? As the movie's about to start, this Asian guy and his kid came up to me. And I said, well, he's stolen my seat. And just pointed at the guy. And the guy's like, oh, okay, but if anyone comes along. And I went, yeah, no one came. So we got through it. But that's how the movie started. But regardless, Stu, I just want to say, I want to go officially on record. I'm giving this a 9.5 out of 10. I found it an immensely enjoyable movie. I thought strong performances from the entire cast. Great performance from Tom Holland. Great performance from the supporting cast. Michael Keaton was great. Like, I didn't see any real weaknesses in this movie.
No, I think the biggest weakness came from the trailer itself. It kind of showed a few moments that it just broke the tension.
The trailer, in all honesty, showed the spine of the movie, in my opinion.
I think 90% of the trailer is fine. It was exactly what you want to see.
Yeah.
It was brief moments of action. Characters walking, talking together, like all that sort of stuff. Fantastic. That's everything I want from a trailer.
Mm.
But the one moment when they saw Tony walking out of his suit after the ferry had been blown in half.
Where he comes out of it?
After he'd seen the day and he was walking out of the suit.
Yes.
And we see that in the trailer.
Yeah, they shouldn't have shown that line.
No, because right before it in the movie, he has this big emotional rant about if you really cared enough about me and about this city, you'd be here.
That's a good point.
And then out he comes.
Because previously he'd sent a drone.
Yeah, well, previously he'd sent like a holo suit to do his...
Man, I dug Iron Man's armor. I'm a big Iron Man.
Yeah, I love that.
Armor's badass. Like, at one point I was like, I've got a big Iron Man figure out there from Age of Ultron that I got in Singapore. And I thought, do I need another one?
I feel like you need 43 of them,
like,
don't you?
I'm like Iron Man all of a sudden. I need to have all these different suits. Also, this is jumping way ahead, but the end uniform of Spider-Man that Tony was displaying.
Iron Spider.
Ooh, gee, I almost leapt right? on the screen.
Oh, now, that was awesome.
Is that the same suit that he has at the end? The exact same?
What do you mean? Which suit?
So this is jumping forward in the movie, and like to the very end. But the one that Tony had to sort of entice him at, right at the end that he said, "Oh, you know, I want to
with
be my
him
man."
And Pepper, yeah.
When he then brought that in a bag or whatever to
Peter's
house. It's a different suit.
The one that he showed him in Avengers headquarters was the Iron Spider suit.
Got it. Okay,
which had the mechanical arms and the whole.
Oh, did it have mechanical arms on it?
They don't show it in the movie, but Iron Spider suit.
I know the Iron Spider suit from
with
the
giant golden mechanical arm.
And it even has that press conference. It's the press conference from the JMS run.
Yeah, exactly.
It was set up perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. No, the suit he has at the end is the same suit he's been running with for most of the movie.
Oh, the one that...
That has Friday as the AI.
Like has, what was his name, Karen.
He named her Karen.
I love that. I love that suit.
Yeah, but it's Tony
Stark. Oh, so it's that suit. It's that suit. He's graduated to have that suit now.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. Okay. I'm glad you're here to explain these very simple points to me because I was like, doesn't look the same as the suit that I was just salivating over seconds before, but it still looks pretty good.
That was another thing that surprised me. It was how long he had that suit for.
Oh, yeah, he had it until Tony kind of got the shits with him.
Well, yeah, but we knew he was going to lose the suit at some point. And I always assumed first act he'd have the cool suit. And then he'd spend the rest of the movie proving he was worthy in the old suit.
The Scarlet Spider, like, hoodie, basically.
The hoodie, yeah.
Yeah.
But it turns out he only really had it for that final third act fight with the Vulture.
I think some of that's because of how iconic the Spider-Man suit is. Like, you really want to see Spider-Man in like, I'm not even talking his super suit, but just the red and black, you know. It's so iconic.
I mean, yeah, I don't think it's a necessity with these movies. I think they're doing such a good job.
Yeah, but dude, people want to see Spider-Man as Spider-Man.
Well, yeah, of course. But we've seen enough of that suit.
Yeah.
Even if he was wearing the hoodie, I'd be satisfied with that.
I wouldn't be satisfied if he was wearing it film after film. I was totally fine with it in this context of this movie.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying like an extra 40 minutes of hoodie Spider-Man, I think would have been a decent compromise.
Well, Stu, I'm here to tell you if I was a producer on the movie, if I was Amy Pascal, I'd say no to to that request from you. I'd say go back to the lab, come up with something new.
I'm glad you're not Amy Pascal for so many reasons.
I would fire off at the hip just Amy Pascal style too. Yeah, I would exactly. run. I would be getting my little nosy into the deals that you wouldn't believe. Now, Stu, I mean, in terms of, this is our spoiler review, so I want to focus on a couple of key things. The twist with Vulture, and this is a, like, seriously, kids, this is a spoiler. But the twist with Vulture and his relationship to Liz. I mean, dude, that fucking came out of nowhere for me. That was like a freight train that hit me.
Yeah, they've never said any last names.
It was so well disguised.
Like, so even the comic book fans, the hardcore fans that knows the Vulture is Adrian Coombs.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
So we kind of know that he's got a name. We know his last name.
Yeah, we know he's like 90 in the comics.
Well, yeah.
He's an
but
old...
they never mentioned it was Liz Coombs. They never said it
no,
was...
No, because I think that character is not normally... That character that she's playing is normally like... I think a character's name is Liz Allen or something. I don't think she normally has any relationship to the Vulture. They sort of merged a character. You know,
yeah,
which, was, of, cle- which yeah. was clever. Like, I mean,
no, that's great. That's the kind of stuff that I'm really wanting from these comic book movies.
Yeah, you know, I thought I really honestly think that Sony and Marvel have really crafted a really entertaining, exciting movie. And I mean, let's face it, Sony did at least two really good Spider-Man movies with Sam Raimi, and this was a real return to form for the whole franchise. I felt the Spidey franchise.
I'd say this is better than any of the other previous Spider-Man movies.
Well, Spider-Man 1 and 2 were very strong in their time. If you
true, take, yeah, I mean this beats them hands down.
I prefer this. If you said to me, which one would you take on if they were all on a plate right now, all the Spider-Man movies that I've seen, I would take this. Partly it's because it's got the modern touches and it brings in the Marvel U, but it's got a very strong lead actor too. Tom Holland is very strong. You know?
Tom Holland really carries this movie well.
Yeah.
People are worried that. This is his first, like, major role. He's been supporting before.
Yeah.
But he really carried this movie well.
Well, I'm famous for my lack of knowledge on, like, minor actors, as we heard last week. And I mean, look, I knew Tom Holland from Civil War, but I loved him in Civil War. Yeah. He's a good actor.
He is. He's fantastic. But the supporting cast in this movie was brilliantly done.
They were great. Like, a lot of them are young, too. Like, I mean, okay, Michael Keaton was fantastic in the role. Okay, yeah. We expect a lot from Michael Keaton, and he delivered.
He's one of the strongest Marvel villains for me as well.
Oh, yeah, and he had the touch of sympathy. They did give you a slight tease that he had a family life. That was the only tease you had, that he had something more than just the sort of, like, leering villain, that he was kind of like the almost cigar-chomping villain. Like,
oh, no. No, he was talking about his family for the entire movie.
Yeah, I get that, but, like, that was the context that then made sense when they paid it off with Liz, is what I'm saying. Like, that was the sympathetic angle to him, because he was pretty mean otherwise. He was a pretty mean bastard otherwise, but they did have that
angle.
No,
I didn't get that at all from him.
No.
No, I got the whole feeling that he was kind of forced into this.
True. Well, he got screwed at the start.
Yeah, exactly. He was a good guy trying to do his job.
Good points, Stu.
And then in the first 5 minutes, you kind of get the flashback that starts out with him losing that contract where he overextended and put his house on the line kind of thing.
And he sort of was like, well, I've got nothing left to lose, so I'm going to exploit this technology and do very well, because he looked like he was doing very well. That was
pretty
nice. Well,
he kind of just happens to be with one of the guys who is playing like a Tinkerer character.
I kept thinking that is kind of pretty much the Tinkerer character, isn't he?
Yeah, not... credited as the Tinkerer, but for all intents and purposes,
that's
the Tinkerer.
A lot of the tech in this movie had very much an Iron Man film flavor to it, didn't you think? Like there was a lot of like visual touches that were very in keeping with the Marvel U. I just felt like it was a really successful merger of the two brands. I really hope this leads to more Spider-Man. I know they're saying like there's going to be like a 4 or 5 arc movie series, like started in Civil War through this.
That's not including Civil War.
No?
No. So we've got 3 Spider-Man movies that have been confirmed.
Two Infinity Wars.
And then we've got, two
Infinity
Avengers.
War and the sequel.
Infinity War and Avengers 4, whatever they're going to call it.
Okay. And Avengers 4 is going to come out before the Spider-Man Homecoming sequel. Am I right?
Infinity War is out, before Homecoming 2 or Spider-Man 2, whatever you want to call it.
But like Infinity War and then the sequel to Infinity War is coming out before Spider-Man Homecoming 2. Am I right?
Could be.
That's how I read it.
That sounds right, because that would be 2 years' time.
Yeah, okay.
then the next Spider-Man.
I hope Spidey gets... I hope this movie makes a ton. I haven't even been tracking box office because I've been really trying to insulate from story.
They're forecasting $100 million.
Good.
For the first weekend.
Well, that's a fucking nice start.
Yeah, exactly.
And it needs that in the US. It needs... Spider-Man needs a commercial bounce back.
Look, this movie is going to do well. They've marketed it so well with Tony Tom doing their thing together.
Yep, yeah, true.
Seeing Iron Man, that's just going to bring in the crowds.
Yep. And how funny, Stu, I think we were talking about before, Happy Hogan's performance is just great. We're great
John,
to see
John
him.
John Favreau as Happy Hogan.
Yeah, he's great.
He's one of the most underrated characters of the MCU.
He's just hilarious.
And his relationship with Tom Holland's Peter Parker was so good.
Just constantly pissed off a bit.
I was so happy with that little give and take with that relationship. I was saying to you off air that I think they could have done more of that and less Tony.
Well, I mean, I could have done with more of both, but it just would have been a longer movie because I liked what I got, you know?
Because to be honest, I felt like they maybe did a little too much Iron Man because it actually started taking away from how much Spider-Man there was.
Yeah, but Iron Man wasn't in it that much. His presence was. He was mentioned constantly.
Stark, yeah, exactly. He was constantly mentioned.
Look,
was
the presence of Stark was heavy over this movie.
Yeah.
And they passed... Robert Downey Jr. was very good, as you'd expect.
Oh, I'm not saying he wasn't good. I'm just saying he was overused.
Yeah, maybe. I come from a different philosophy to you, Stu, with this. Like, I, for so many years, wanted Spider-Man... in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Like, before there even was a Marvel Cinematic Universe, when they had the Spider-Man movies, I wanted them to start doing it then. I didn't really... When I was young, I didn't really understand all the complications of the studio deals.
I mean, everyone wants to see these characters play together.
Yeah, I just wanted them to cut the deal, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I wanted it for so long that now it's finally happening. I'm like... Dude, give me a six-hour movie because I feel like I could. At one point in the movie, dude, I sort of forgot how old I am. I was like, man, I could be swinging around a Spider-Man. I was back in the universe. You know, like it really. I'm never far away from being. We've got a question later on in the show about Marvel DC. I've always been, even as a kid. You know, like I'm talking like a little kid with Spider-Man and it was Batman and basically. I just veered between the two. Even before I really got into comics, Spider-Man was just everything. And when I was watching this movie, and pretty much every Spider-Man movie has done this to me because I'm such a fan, but this one really did it. I was like, my God, I love this character in this world. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It was just
I think that's why I was saying there's a little, maybe too much Iron Man.
I hear.
It was that I love this character. I want to see more of this character.
True. Well, we'll see it.
And
we know
a lot
that
of this felt like it was a muted version of Peter.
Yeah.
Constantly trying to please Tony Stark. Constantly trying to...
I just think they're very keen to give that Marvel Cinematic Universe brand. I think, you know, they're really like, audiences don't, you know, this is the Avengers, this is Spider-Man, he's here to stay. Like, they're really trying to sort of grab the young kids who love Iron Man, you know, and go, and he's his buddy, and he's young, just like you. You know, they're doing it. And look, to be honest, it's working, you know. I hear what you're saying, but you know, apparently from a report I read and, like, take these reports that you read online years before a movie's even filmed, apparently Iron Man will not be in Spider-Man Homecoming 2. That's a report I read. Now, we're years away from all this, so take that for what it's worth.
I'd be surprised if he was in Spider-Man 2, to be honest.
Just saying. Like, apparently they were sort of petitioning for who else. I think that's a clever move. I think after 2, Infinity War, and then the sequel, assuming Robert Downey Jr.'s character even lives... or hasn't retired, I think that his presence is needed for this. I think it's an introduction for younger, you know, sort of viewers or more mainstream viewers who really know Iron Man more than Spider-Man in the film franchise over the last 5 to 10 years.
Oh, look, right now Iron Man is a bigger character than Spider-Man.
Yeah, but
in pop culture, Iron Man is now bigger than Spider-Man.
Probably, but I don't think by much. Probably, but not by a significant amount. I would say. I think Spider-Man he's always been the face of Marvel, and yes, he's been diminished in recent years because of the success of the Avengers, but this is a pretty strong comeback. I wouldn't be surprised if I see an upswing in Spider-Man. Like, Spider-Man merchandising is still very strong. This will be a strong box office movie.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, put it this way, he's never that far away. He's still an A-lister at Marvel, for sure. and this is only making him bigger. Spider-Man needed this commercial bounce back, though, because the last couple of Spider-Man movies disappointed in the States.
The last three have been disappointing in the States, yeah.
Yeah, Spider-Man 3, though, worldwide box office, highest one of any of the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, internationally, yeah. The US, it was disappointing.
It was disappointing. And Amazing Spider-Man 1 was even more so.
Critically, that's still the worst movie.
Oh, definitely. 100%. I didn't really think... Can I be honest here? And this is just my opinion, listeners, and don't, you know, go too crazy, because I love this movie. I thought Amazing Spider-Man 1 and Amazing Spider-Man 2 weren't too bad. I enjoyed them. Like, I'm not saying they were anywhere near as good as this, but I didn't mind them as movies. Like, I thought Andrew Garfield was decent. And I don't know.
If you haven't read a Spider-Man comic, those movies are fine.
Yeah.
But they completely fucked up the character.
Yeah.
Wasn't Peter Parker.
No, I suppose not, but...
Like, they could have just named him Brett and had Brett be Spider-Man, because that's what it felt like.
True. I know. Good point. Look, put it this way, dude. I'm not missing them. I'm glad you can sign them in the back of my memory, you know? I thought this was, honestly... Because the original Spider-Man movies were tonally very close to Spider-Man. The Spider-Man 1 and 2 were pretty much off the page.
Yeah, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Yeah, they were...
That was close to the character.
Very close. Like, they got the origins
Spider-Man
down.
Spider-Man 3 was... weird and off.
It was weird and off, and I think Sam Raimi was a disgruntled director, didn't want Venom. It had problems, you know?
Yeah, it had a lot.
Ironically, of wanted Vulture. That was why he left. He wanted Vulture for Spider-Man 4. They wouldn't give it to him, and he left.
Right, what do you mean they wouldn't give it to him?
Sony wouldn't give him the movie, greenlight the movie, with Vulture as the single villain.
Because of Spider-Man 3.
No, not because Spider-Man 3 made a lot of money for the studio. So they wanted Sam Raimi to do Spider-Man 4. Sam Raimi walked off the project because they wouldn't greenlight Spider-Man 4, because Sam Raimi stuck to his guns and said, I'm only doing it if you allow me to have Vulture as the main villain. And they didn't, and they couldn't come to terms, and so he walked. And that's why there was no Spider-Man 4.
Why would they not give him Vulture? That seems like a weird...
It was just one of those odd things. He'd already had a very disgruntled... He was a very disgruntled director on Spider-Man 3. He didn't want Venom in the movie at all. He was forced to have Venom in the movie. And
it didn't fit right.
Yeah, like,
it didn't feel right.
Yeah, and Sam Raimi's a great director, dude. Like, Spider-Man 1 and 2, say what you like, considering the time period they were made in, are really good movies. They're very solid. You know, Tobey Maguire's not the greatest Spider-Man, but they're solid movies. And you've got to remember...
I think right now, Tom Holland is the best Spider-Man.
But 100%, I don't think it's even close.
Like, he's just blown them out of the water.
Yeah, it's not even close. But I'm just doing the critical thing. We take away whoever's playing Spider-Man. As a movie, Spider-Man 1 and 2 were good movies. Spider-Man Homecoming is a better movie with a better star, with a better supporting cast.
Yeah.
And it's got the fresh Marvel Cinematic sheen all over it. Stu, I'm giving it a 9.5 out of 10. What are you giving it, man?
I've got it down as a 9.5 out of 10 as well.
Woohoo! Stu and I in agreement here.
Yeah.
Wowee. Light up the
like, if it weren't for the trailer, it would have been a 10. Like,
bang.
There's not much you can fault with this movie.
I don't even know where I'm, because I didn't see. That's what I was going to say. If I saw Mr. Domain a little bit more, his skimpy clothing, if I actually saw it, like, it might be a 10. I mean, she was...
That's what it takes?
Well, it's so close to a 10. She's a 10, man. Like, I'll say this. I've had a crush on Mr. Domain since the 90s. And I remember the movie she did with Robert Downey Jr. called Only You in the mid-90s. I think I've mentioned on the show before, it was a date movie of mine. And she was gorgeous. She's a gorgeous, gorgeous actress. And watching this as the cool aunt, I mean, I was just like, I just want to be part of that family. You know, like, I mean, and marrying into it is what I actually mean. You know, like...
Yeah, we all know what you mean. We all know what you're talking about.
Okay, I just thought I'd clarify for you.
So, did you like Zendaya's MJ? Because that was the only character that
was a twist,
really, they'd really twisted.
I didn't mind it.
MJ in the comic is always super confident, loud, the life of the party.
You hit the jackpot tiger.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, she's the model.
Full of confidence, full of...
Yeah, they sort of...
And now they've really underplayed her with Zendaya's portrayal.
More of a sarcastic sort of, world-weary teen.
Yeah, but really not popular, not a popular character, not...
No, she's the opposite of, like, Mary Jane in the comics. But I'm okay with it, dude. I don't mind. Like,
so you like that change?
I like the actress. I like Zendaya. I think she's a very talented actress. And I think Yeah, look, I mean, I had no issues with it at all. I hoped that was where they were going with it. I hoped that she was going to either be Gwen or Mary Jane. And I thought probably the odds are, given that Gwen was killed in Amazing Spider-Man 2 and there was no Mary Jane in those movies, and they didn't actually credit her at any point as Mary Jane in the lead-up to this. There was, you know, no one had given me 100% confirmation that she was... It was assumed she probably was.
They'd leaked that the name was Michelle.
Yes, they had.
But they'd never connected that with MJ officially.
Yeah, yeah. You know, exactly. So, and yeah. No, I didn't mind it, man. I mean, like, I'm all for diversifying the cast list, and I'm unchanging a character. Like, to be honest...
Oh, no, visually, it, never an issue.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that MJ is a redhead in the comics makes no difference to me whatsoever.
No.
It was more the fact that she's... not got that same boisterous MJ attitude.
Yeah, but she was still like a, you know, like she, I kind of dug that character. She's like the, you think Breakfast Club?
Yeah.
She's like the rebel misfit character played by God, whatever that chick's name is. Like, you know, the rebel one.
Yeah. Like,
you know, you've got the prom queen and you've got the jock and you've got the brain and she was like the rebel. The chick up, Ally Sheedy, I think is her name. Yeah. And she plays that kind of style of character, slightly more personalised. No, I actually, that was like the second twist of the movie. There was three twists. There was Liz being the daughter of the Vulture.
Yep.
Then there was the twist of Mary Jane being Zendaya's character.
Yeah, and not, yeah, because I think everyone was thinking it was going to be Liz, the character that Peter's pointing at
the entire movie. Yeah, yeah. There is a character, I'm not super familiar with the period, there is a character, I think her name's Liz Allen, who was like one of his, if not one of his girlfriends, she was part of that high school or college.
Mm.
She was there somewhere in the Spider-Man comics. I sort of know of her rather than have dialed right into it. But the third one, Stu, and this is what I want to get from you, and this ties into the trade we're doing this week, the JMS trade. How about the last scene of the movie before the end credits? Before the credits where Aunt May, Marissa, yeah, walks in just when he's put the new suit on. Just like, what the fuck?
Just when he drops the suit off.
Dude, I dug it. I love it.
I love that moment.
And this is something we will talk about in our trade review, but I'm happy to talk about it now. I'm never that comfortable with the continued lying to the significant other of the character. Like, I never think that's in keeping with Superman's character. I don't think it's in keeping with Spider-Man, who's such a good-hearted character. I can never understand why he would lie to Aunt May for that long, which he did until, like, year 2000. I think it's really good in this thing that they're pushed out right in front. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think not telling them fits in with the characters well, though.
Yeah.
Because every time Peter's told someone...
Yeah.
Someone's gotten hurt.
Oh, it's more dramatic that she finds out like this.
Like, there's more Parker luck involved.
Yeah.
And I think now that May knows...
She'll put him over her knee and spank him, I think, for this. She'll be mad. That's what I love about Aunt May. She's fiery, you know, like... That's what I like about this performance from Aunt May, like, from Marissa. She's got a little bit of fire to her. She's got that flair to her. She's got that Italian temper, you know?
Yeah.
No, I just thought it was a really... I was hoping that would happen. I actually thought when we were reading the trade we're doing this week, the JMS trade, she finds out by walking in on him when he's bloodied and...
Yeah,
asleep.
Yeah. So he's basically passed out when...
Pretty much, even though she doesn't find him like that, she still finds out through, not through his choosing.
Yeah.
I like that because I think it brings more drama into it. You know that Aunt May is going to forgive him. You know Marissa Tomei is going to forgive him.
Oh, yeah. And it's taken straight from the comics. You can't,
yeah,
you can't
cool.
be upset with a moment that's taken literally straight from the pages of the comics.
Dude, when I think about it, Marvel and like Feige and whoever, they've done a masterful job here. Like even that scene at the end where the press conference is outside, that if Spider-Man wanted to walk through there, he could have walked through there.
Yeah, and that's set I like up, that little moment.
And that's set up in the comics and they're so clever with how they're doing it.
Yeah.
They really seem to be grasping better than Marvel Comics are how to do Spider-Man. You know?
Yeah, I'd agree.
Look, that might seem like a hard-hitting fucking comment, but you can't tell me that Slott Spider-Man is anything like as entertaining as this movie.
No, and that, man, you can just... This movie takes so much from JMS.
It does.
From these great runs.
I'm not surprised.
They're not taking much from Slott's run.
Look, Slott had Slott's got good periods, really good periods, but not recently. Dude, I'll tell you something funny. Okay, a lot of conjecture over who's going to be writing Spider-Man and many other lead characters after Legacy or with Legacy. And Slott confirmed, apparently he is. He confirmed on Twitter that he will be, which I find fucking weird. Like, and anyway, but apparently, guess who the rumor is? that's going to take over after Slott? Have a guess. Think of any writer you could think of. Think of a writer that we've mentioned a lot. Think of a writer that... I think of a writer, Stu, that I went to the internet for... He ran for mayor of Cincinnati.
Oh, please. Please don't.
That's who it's supposed to be, man. Nick Spencer.
Seriously, they're putting Spencer on this?
That's... Look, that's the rumour reported on Bleeding Cool. I'm merely repeating someone else's rumour. I don't know if it's true or not. I mean, fucking really? Like,
that's sad. That's really sad.
Yeah, I mean... Now, I will say this about Spencer, because you know I've got a record. I don't hate Nick Spencer. Right? He's done some good work, man. He's got talent. But frankly, I mean, you know what I'm worried about? The slow drip storytelling. Because what Spider-Man needs is a fresh, updated take that's not taking forever. Like, Slott has turned this into, like, he's writing War and Peace. It's about as entertaining. It's about as dry. And, like, he's got, like, Spider-Man as, like, Tony Stark sort of light, you know, running his own company, yada, yada, yada. Bring Spider-Man back to the streets, man. You know? Give him some adventures, dude. Not running a fucking corporation. Like, that's not entertaining. But anyway, your Nick Spencer's a rumour, Stu. You not feeling it over there? You look like you're in shell shock.
I don't have the time to deal with another Spencer story.
Yeah.
I don't have a year to wait to get some kind of payoff.
Please, Nick Spencer, if you do get this, don't make Spider-Man fucking Hydra. Like, fuck off, basically. You know what? Actually, don't change anything. Go with the prototype and do that thing where, like, you know what? Spider-Man's been Dr. Octopus. Spider-Man's been fucking Tony Stark Light. Spider-Man potentially is for Hydra. We don't even know where Peter Parker is in Secret Empire. I don't think he's even turned up once. But, like, I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I just thought I'd report that news to you. That was some news that came in Legacy. I've got it later in the show, but I just wanted to give you that spin. But, Stu, I had a conversation online where I was mentioning how great the JMS run was. And a guy was disputing, going, oh, au contraire, it's not great because he did something with Gwen Stacy's pregnancy. And I'm like, dude, a fucking minor story beat, I can forgive. I don't even remember it. The general thrust of it and how it was developed was fantastic. And this movie took a fair chunk of that, I thought. Took some major beats.
Yeah, it did. I'm so happy with this movie pretty much every way.
Yeah, me too. Stu, did you feel like I don't know how much more we're going to say here, but I honestly felt like if they'd said to me at the end of the screening, we've got Spider-Man Homecoming 2 ready to go, do you want to watch that one, Dave? I would have been like, you just keep me in here. Like, I was just ready to keep rolling in that world, man.
Yeah, I always feel that way after a comic movie.
Normally I do, but a really good one, like the really good Marvel ones in particular, I'm just like, man, I could just stay in here. You know, like, it just, that's the secret to success. That's the ultimate proof.
Yeah, I mean, the pacing of this movie was fantastic. You never felt like you were sitting through a movie.
Yeah.
It kept you going. It kept you interested. It kept you
totally focused. Yeah.
There was never a point where you went, oh, how much longer?
There was no fluff. There was no film. And his supporting cast helped. Like, his mate helped. What's his mate's name?
Was it Ned?
Ned.
Jacob Batalon.
Did a good job, I thought. Did a good job.
Fantastic. I love the smaller roles. Even the coach by Hannibal Buress.
He was funny.
He was hilarious.
It was so funny when he's like the Captain America spiel. He's like, he's like a war criminal now.
And just waves at the right time. That was so good. I loved that character.
That was great.
Donald Glover as well. So good.
I thought Donald Glover, this is, again, my ignorance. I thought Donald Glover was going to become the Shocker. I thought that was something we'd actually discussed, but no, he was...
Yeah, because the way he was portrayed in the trailer, he was there with the Shocker.
Yeah, but he was really just a supporting... He was really kind of just a bit part, really.
Well, no. His character's quite a big character.
Who?
He's playing Aaron Davis.
Who's that?
Who's that? Oh, Dave.
Who's Aaron Davis when he's at home?
Aaron Davis, when he's at home, he's looking after his nephew.
Who?
Miles Morales.
Oh, okay, right. No, I wondered if there was a Miles Morales connection.
Yeah, Donald Glover's playing his uncle. The guy who's...
You're holding all the cards over there, right? She's got a grin on him like a Cheshire cat. Like, you would... I've not read Miles Morales' story. You said Aaron Davis. I was looking at you blankly like... I thought, is this some cosmic bullshit? Like,
and he mentions him in the movie as well.
Does he mention Miles Morales?
He says my nephew. Yeah, I've got to get home to my nephew. I don't want
him to... Oh, that's really cool. No, I'm really appreciate that because I actually know that... In the animated movie they're doing next year, I believe Donald Glover's playing
Donald Glover's done a couple of runs as Miles Morales.
Yeah.
His voice acting.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was the favourite to play Miles Morales if they went that direction.
Yeah, he's obviously aged out now. You couldn't have him playing a
Yeah, well, instead they went with the Tom Holland.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider-Man. But, so, yeah, there's the moment where he's talking to Spider-Man and he says that he wants the streets clean because, you know, he doesn't want his nephew to get caught up with his gang wars with these superpowered weapons.
He did say that. Yeah, that's right. And, yeah, he was very sympathetic. I mean, he was... I liked his performance.
Fantastic.
I really liked his performance. I'm not in any way...
I love that. When he webs him to the boot of that car.
Yeah, that was funny.
He's like, come on, man, I've got ice cream in here. It'll melt in 2 hours. Come on, I got ice cream.
And he goes, no, sorry, you're a criminal.
Yeah.
You deserve it, Mr. Criminal. No, that makes sense. I was thinking during that, I wondered if there was some link. I was thinking there must be something because he's so closely associated with Miles Morales and he pushed so hard for it.
Yeah, and I think this is why last week Kevin Feige came out and said, Miles Morales is in this universe somewhere.
Got it.
He's out there, but we're not going to see him in Homecoming.
Now, in the animated movie that they're doing next year, he is playing Miles Morales, isn't he?
Yeah, and he has done in, I think, 2 animated shorts so far.
Yeah, I think he might have played him, I want to say...
In 2 episodes of...
Ultimate Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah.
A show I fucking love.
Yeah.
By the way, a show I will go on record as saying it's one of my favourite cartoons. I fucking love that show.
Yeah, so I mean, so, I feel like this... actually sets up a pretty decent way to...
Yeah.
After 3 movies, you kill off Peter Parker, you bring in Miles, refresh the whole thing.
Are you trying to, like... Like, as you say...
that'd be fantastic.
Stu, not for me, mate. Like,
Tom Holland is brilliant, but after 5 movies, he's going to age out of Peter Parker.
I'm refused
He can be the Uncle Ben moment for Miles Morales, which gets another brilliant actor to come in.
Happen. I'm not really feeling that.
I would love to see that.
You want to see Peter Parker die? Why? Just because you want to see me cry during a podcast? Or you've upset me just mentioning it.
Well, I mean, that would be a bonus.
You bastard.
I'm not going to complain.
I'll be honest. Look, I've got no problems with Miles Morales. I think Miles Morales is a cool character, and they may well go down that route. I haven't yet summoned up the mental fortitude to read The Death of Peter Parker and Ultimate Spider-Man. I own it. The death of Spider-Man, like an Ultimate Spider-Man.
It's good read.
I know, but it's too close to me, man. It's like, it's honestly like if you took my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, if someone came to me and said, Dave,
well,
you know, that's how close it is. But you know what? Yes, I have to push through and read it. I understand that.
I mean, but, look, to be honest, this is just, we've already had 5 Spider-Man movies. We've got another 3 plus Avengers and Civil War cameos.
Yeah. So what?
Are we ready to see a different character yet?
Not really. No, because we've just restarted. We're just starting, man. Like, calm down over there. Like, I'll be honest. Amazing Spider-Man 2, I saw it with my sister. I struggled with the death of Gwen Stacy. I was actually hoping that it wouldn't happen, as I always do with the death of Gwen Stacy. I actually thought...
You saw every warning sign throughout that entire movie. You've read the death of Stacy's.
Yep. Yeah. And when it was... But when she almost, like, held on, I was like, she might make it.
She might make it snap.
And it was just, I remember my sister took me out for dinner afterwards and I was a mess. I was fucking genuinely very upset. It touches me, that whole thing with Spider-Man touches me very closely. I'm not saying they won't do it. Obviously I'll go watch it, but give Peter Parker some room to breathe, dude. Like, let the kid explore. Let's see what happens. If these movies make tons and tons and tons of money, and the world doesn't run dry. I want to see him in the black costume again. I want to see him do Kraven's Last Hunt. Bring in Miles Morales, but you don't have to kill Peter Parker.
Well, yeah, but I feel like they've got 2 movies. Do your best 2 stories.
Yeah.
Whether they be Kraven, whether they be Venom.
Yeah.
Whether you take another smaller villain.
Or Kraven and Venom together.
Why not?
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah. Well, you know they're doing Venom, so, you know.
But, yeah, I mean, even go with a smaller kind of villain.
Yeah, there's plenty to choose from.
Morlan maybe would be a cool pick.
Yeah, yeah. Well, dude, that was the one in JMS, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
I was thinking for a second, the Living Vampire as well. You could bring Blade in. You could bring all sorts of characters. Look, there's so many characters in the Spider-Man universe.
I think do your 2 best movies.
Yeah.
At the end of those 2, if it's still running, if this gravy train's still rolling.
It will be.
Keep him on, fine. But I think a lot of people would really like to see a different version of Spider-Man come out there.
Well, you're going to see it in the animated movie next year, Stu, so calm your farm over there. Like, what's this?
I think people are a little maybe too precious with their comic book characters in these movies.
I'm usually not, but with Spider-Man, I am very precious. Spider-Man's on my, like, as a little kid. It's like if you came up to me, Stu, as like a 5-6-year-old, that's when I started becoming a fan of Spider-Man, and said to me, guess what? In 3 years, we're going to kill him. That, it's still like, mentally, I'm still there. I'm still getting the new, like, I'm not feeling it, man. Like, I'm like, no, don't do it. And I, like, you just came up to a 6-year-old Dave and go, guess what? Did you enjoy that movie, Dave? Yeah, I loved it. It was great. 9.5 out of 10. We're going to kill him in 3 years. Just walk away. That's what you've just done.
I'd say it's more like 6 years. But yeah, we're going to kill him.
How old will I be? Okay, I'll be well into my 40s. Maybe I can handle it. Maybe I can handle it.
Can adult Dave handle this one?
I barely handle Gwen Stacy, man. And I could say, when I was in that thing with Bendis many years ago. Did I tell you the story?
Yeah.
When I got the microphone, and I said, "Are you really going to kill him? kill her? Maybe she'll make it." And so it's the same thing with me. I'm always like, maybe she'll make it this time. The only one she made it through was Spider-Man 3. The most reviled one of the whole franchise. She was in that, and she was so gorgeous. I was in love with her. And she made it through, and I was like, she finally made it.
The only person to find that movie.
The reason they didn't, they didn't really develop a character role.
That movie ends, and everyone was like, oh, that was disappointing. And Dave sitting in the back, going, yeah!
She made it! And that fed me a lot of false hope in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Nope.
Shout out to Stella, actually, on Batman Oracle, because she was also the same. She actually said that after Amazing Spidey 2, like, her emotional devastation was so huge with the death of Gwen Stacy. Like, she really wasn't sure if she could...
It was a moving moment.
It was a very moving moment.
It just wasn't a great franchise.
No, but they did do that moment well. That was the one part of the movie I thought that really paid off really well. Now, I've got a question. Did... the character in Amazing Spidey 2 played by Jamie Foxx, was that the Shock? Oh, that was Electro, wasn't it?
That was Electro, yeah.
Yeah, the Shocker's funny, man. Like, he was... I love that scene where Michael Keaton, the Vulture, just disintegrated the guy.
Thinking it was an anti-grav gun.
Yeah, and then he goes, well, you're the Vulture, and just tosses it to the other guy.
You're the Shocker, yeah. Tosses him the new gauntlet.
Who... Now, got another question. Even as I saw it, I thought, I'm going to ask you this. After credits scene, we're deep into post-spoilers, when Michael Keaton bumped into that guy, an actor I know from something else, what was that actor from? Like, was he in the movie, the guy who had sort of the bloody eye and stuff?
Yeah, that was...
Because I know that actor. He's in something I'm watching. Oh, you know what he's in? He's in Better Call Saul. He's that's I know this guy, but not from this franchise. So I was going to ask you this because I'm sure I've missed it somewhere.
He looks super familiar. I just can't remember where he's from.
Well, he's from Better Call Saul. That's where I know him from. He's the drug dealer. It's like peon guy. He's like Saul's sort of mate. Sort of thing like
no,
that.
No, I'm talking in the MCU. Not just that actor's face.
I've got no idea.
The character looked... I can't remember what it was from. He reminded me of, like, the original Iron Man villain. It's not the same actor, but...
The original Iron Man villain? Who?
Yeah.
Which one?
Who ran the Ten Rings and the Mandarin? Desert?
The Mandarin?
No, not the Mandarin. That was in Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Iron Man 1.
I don't remember the one that held him...
Oh, Dave...
I don't remember the villain. I remember the movie, but I don't remember the villain. I haven't seen it in, like, fucking many years. I always watch Iron Man 3. Iron Man 3 is my go-to. Watched Iron Man 2 on the plane recently, actually. Sam Rockwell's performance, I still love it. Gets a lot of hate Iron Man 2, but I fucking love Sam Rockwell's performance in it. I think he's so funny as, like, is it Justin Hammer?
Yeah.
I think he's hilarious. His performance is really funny. It's really cheesy. I've always really enjoyed it. Like, people always hate that movie, and it's definitely the weakest of the Iron Man movies, but I must admit I've got a soft spot for his performance. He's just so cheesy and funny. Well, I don't know. Is that the end of our spoiler review, Stu? Have we sort of covered everything? There's not much to cover in the end credits scene. There's that guy. We need to work out who he is and if he's... So it seems like he's not in the rest of the movie, though, is he? Because they sort of alluded... He said that Spider-Man hit his eye.
He didn't mention his eye. He just said that he wanted to know who Spider-Man
was. No, he said Spider-Man did this to me and pointed to his face because he's got, like, the bloodied eye and a bit of a scar.
Yeah.
So...
But I don't remember Spider-Man ever doing anything.
No, that's what I'm saying. In this movie, and then other than this, the only fighting Spider-Man's done is in Civil War. So it's off-panel. It's off-screen.
Look, unless that guy was just one of the goons that he busted in that bank robbery at the beginning of the movie.
Good point.
So he could have been there. So, yeah, that first post-credits scene, it sets up the idea that the Vulture's still out there, which I like.
Yes.
Because he was a really strong villain for Marvel.
Yep.
and that he didn't want to give away the identity because he wants Spider-Man for himself.
Yeah,
so it wouldn't surprise me if we see him come back in later movies.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a cameo kind of appearance.
Well, Michael Keaton, you've always got in the back pocket, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, for Sinister Six or something, you know? Or three or four or whatever, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You could show him in any one of these spin-off movies that
he could be. Oh, that's a really good point. Yeah, to use in the other movies. Yeah, like outside
Ham Hiver as a villain to work with Black and Silver kind of thing or against them.
Yeah,
You know, it's a decent character.
And you've still got his daughter there as well. I mean, his daughter was gorgeous, by the way. Like, you've still got her in play.
Yeah, exactly.
So
you've got a bunch of solid characters now that are ready to go.
I like when they don't kill a character off like that. I think a guy like Michael Keaton, you keep in the back pocket, you know?
Oh, for sure.
You know, it's just... I always felt the original Batman 89 made a mistake in killing Nicholson at the end. I always felt... You know,
yeah, I always think it's a mistake to kill the Joker.
Yeah, I just even back then I thought, why?
Whether the Joker's good or not, I just think it's a mistake to kill that character.
You
want to
keep them in play, you know?
Because the Joker
don't show them with their head chopped off, which is what they did in 89. They showed him dead. Yes, he's dead. Yeah, he's definitely dead.
They showed him properly dead.
Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, yeah, first post credit scene, you kind of set up a villain. Second post credit scene, just trolling the audience.
It was just. It was like, yes, Dave.
It was another Captain America video just coming out with... Don't you hate it when you get those really disappointing messages?
Yep. This is it.
And
patience can be a virtue.
That was great. I enjoyed that, though. Like, the cinema I was at, they were laughing at that point.
Yeah, it was a laugh, man. Like, you know.
It was just good fun.
And it's funny that Chris Evans, like, he's not really in the movie other than as the ad, but he's funny when he's in it.
Yeah, but he's got, like, five little, scenes on video the whole way through, and they're always cheesy.
What about when he's in detention, and he's like, so, you're in detention.
So, you made a mistake, and you're in detention.
He goes, your body could change. I know that.
Yeah, exactly. And Hannibal Gross is just asleep at his desk.
You want to be cool. As a man who got frozen ice for 40 years, believe you me, I understand.
Oh, they were really good.
Yeah, they were good. It was such a clever movie. Whoever the writers are on this film, and obviously Feige's producer, and like whoever's involved in this, is really they should be really happy.
John Watts is directing it. And he's not a name that was well known before this.
He did a great job.
He did a great job.
He really did a great job, I thought, really.
I was very happy with that.
Stu, this is an item, just before you go out, this is technically in spoiler territory. What was your view, no Spidey sense? Because to me, I unfortunately read that before I went into the film. Like, it was a fucking headline on something. No Spidey sense. And my initial reaction was, what bullshit. Didn't miss it in the movie. But I do prefer
it. I don't know whether the Spider-Man doesn't have a Spidey sense, but they never made mention of it directly, and they never kind of...
No, but he does, normally. Spider-Man almost always has Spidey sense in the comics. He loses it occasionally.
Yeah, I'm just saying in this movie, they never made mention of him not having it.
No.
It was never a problem. I don't know why this article exists.
Well, I guess what they're pointing to... And to be honest, if I hadn't read this article, I wouldn't have even thought of it. But I guess... In the other Spider-Man movies, did he have it in Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2? He definitely had it in Spider-Man 1, 2, and 3.
In 1, 2, and 3, they make direct reference to it.
Yeah, they do the slow motion and everything.
Well, they do the slow motion in the Amazing Spider-Man as well.
Yeah, do they? That's right. Yeah, with the plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I prefer I'm a traditionalist, as I've already shown in this segment, and I do prefer him to have Spidey sense, but... I'm not deducting any points because they carry it off flawlessly. And frankly, if I didn't know about Spidey sense, I wouldn't have even thought of it. Like, if I hadn't read this article before I walked in, you know, I didn't miss it in the movie sort of thing.
Well, no, I don't think it wasn't there. I think it was there. He had Spidey sense. He was dodging punches without being able to see the fist coming.
True, they just didn't do sort of like the explanation of it.
They just didn't slow it down and make, tell you that this is a power
just
he
like
has.
They didn't go, well, we lost Uncle Ben.
Exactly. It great was just, power we've comes seen this movie five times
I like
before.
That. I
you know what's good. Happening better than we do.
Yeah.
His origin story is now second only to Batman's in terms of notoriety.
I was thinking that during the movie. I'm thinking, isn't it funny? Batman and him, my two favourites, their storyline, their origin is so powerful, both of them. You know?
It's not that it's more powerful than any other origin. It's just that it's been so told over and over again.
I'd call Batman's origin pretty powerful. His parents gunned down in Crime Alley, man. Jesus.
It gets less powerful every time it gets told, though.
I suppose.
Like, the 15th time you hear his parents are going to get gunned down, you're like, well, yeah, they've died 100 times in the comics.
But also, like,
I'm over it.
The Move side on. Streets to get to the alley have been so covered as well. Like, all the things that have happened in the lead up.
Exactly right. Like, it's
just, every step of the way.
Yeah. As an audience member, I've seen this origin story. Get over yourselves.
I heard Slot once gave a funny interview. I think it was on John Suntress, I think it was, and he was saying it's really funny that everyone involved around the bite to the burglarer, you know, who killed Uncle Ben, everyone's had issues. Like, the janitor's had issues. Like, the whole thing has been, like, freeze-framed down. Like,
yeah, exactly.
You know, like, and I agree.
We don't need to see this
sort of stuff. We don't need another post-mortem of the incident.
No. And I think the same is with Spidey Sense. We just know it's true. There. We don't need to slow it down and have him.
In a future movie, I wouldn't mind if they're going to do it. I wouldn't mind him displaying it in some way. I'm not close to it, but I didn't miss it in this film at all.
Yeah.
Or would you prefer never to say it?
In fight scenes, I don't want to say it. I'd rather him just react without.
But what about something like where he has, I don't know, they do it really well in the comics where they do the thing where you sort of see the...
Like the lightning bolt kind of shape things coming out of his head.
You could do it. You could do it well in a movie. You know, maybe if it's something big enough.
I'd rather see it be used for him, like, sitting in class and then sense something's going on the other side of the town kind of thing.
Okay.
Like something big's happening.
More like a radar.
2 miles away. And for him to pick up on that. Yeah. I think that's a more useful...
Than just like, I'm about to be punched, dark weave.
Yeah, if he ducks out of the way of a punch he can't see coming, I don't need an explanation for it because I know Spider-Man.
Like, true.
That doesn't worry me at all. I'd rather use it as a storytelling mechanism where you can see him getting into these fights.
Kind of like Daredevil in the original Daredevil with Baffleck. The only bit I liked is when he went to the isolation chamber because he could hear everything. I thought it was a really good movie. Have you seen the original Daredevil?
The isolation chamber where he slept.
Yeah.
That was so he couldn't hear anything.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. But I liked that part of the movie that he was hearing everything, like people being raped and stuff like miles away, and he realised he couldn't do everything, and that's why he went to the isolation chamber. I just thought that scene was always very powerful to me in a fairly boring movie.
Yeah.
I just liked the way they did that. I mean, you could do that with Spider-Man, could hear things, you know?
Well, yeah. See, I'd be using the Spidey sense instead of... Because he doesn't have spider hearing. Like, that's not a thing.
No. But that's so, kind of more what you're thinking, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I don't want to see it used in a fight scene. I don't want to see it.
No, I because I agree.
In a small scale, I think it just takes time and effort to show it.
Yeah,
and you don't gain a lot from.
No, you don't gain much. You gain that he ducks away from Vulture's punch.
You might gain one cool kind of slow motion shot during a fight.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
that's been done to death since the 2000s.
Maybe something like I'm just going to put it out there. If something really massive happened, like Juggernaut came rolling out of a building and smashed him, like something that was so OP in comparison to Spider-Man, something might happen then. You know, like if Thanos turned up and smacked him around.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the radar might go off if it's like so off the scale in power as compared to his normal, you know, level.
Yeah, see, I'd...
Rather than just someone throws a pencil at him and, oh, Spidey sense and like...
Yeah, you know. Exactly. Like, yeah. I'd rather see, like, if Thanos ever touched down on Earth, wherever Spider-Man is, he kind of shivers.
Yeah. That's great.
You don't need much more than that. Just him...
Amy Pascal, we've got Stuart here. He's available on the writing staff.
Something's coming up.
Yep.
We don't even need him to get up and run. Like, just...
Yeah.
Flash to him and know that Spider-Man's on it.
Yeah.
Flash
cut,
back.
Cut. Yeah, looks. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We cut around, we see the... Guardians up there watching it, you know.
It's writing itself.
Use it for storytelling. Point. We don't need to use it for mundane fight scenes.
You could put that in an envelope and mail that off to Kevin Feige right now.
Ugh.
There you go. Now, Stu, are we done on a spoiler review? We're set on 9.5. Any other little tidbits you'd like to say here, mate?
No, I think we got the only other tidbit I had was that
go.
The suit lady,
lover.
Karen. Who they named Karen.
Yeah.
Voiced by Jennifer Connelly.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, she had a familiar voice, yeah.
Yeah. They'd been rumoured that she was in the movie, but no one could figure out where she was.
I really dug her. I thought she had a really good relationship.
So she was the voice actor for the AI.
Was he he was talking to her, wasn't he? Properly talking to her.
Yeah. He was out loud just talking. Yeah.
And she was in his head, much like Jarvis is inside Iron Man's
suit. Yeah, or now Friday, since the Vision took Jarvis.
Oh, okay. Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no Jarvis anymore.
Oh, yeah, because what's his name is?
Ultron.
He already voiced Jarvis, didn't he?
Yes.
Did he?
Paul Bettany voiced Jarvis.
Right.
And then when Jarvis and Ultron kind of collided and the Vision came out of
it. That's a pretty fucking lucky piece of casting, isn't it?
Like I enjoyed that bit of casting. I really
liked that's what I'm saying. But even for that acting, you get the Jarvis voice. That might be all the role is, but instead it turns into a live action role where you're playing Vision.
Yeah,
like down the road.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's a fucking tasty piece of casting. I guess they're very clever how they cast. There's some thought put into it.
They are, but I doubt when they cast him as Jarvis, they had any idea that they were going to create the Vision out of it.
Do you know the story with him that he was basically quitting acting? Like, Paul Bettany had no offers whatsoever.
Well, yeah, he had a real slump.
He had a massive slump, and then his agent called.
Because the last big movie before that was Angels and Demons.
Right, okay.
Where he played the albino monk that was whipping himself.
I didn't see it. Like, I'm not about to go and see it either.
No, not a great movie.
But, yeah, he's like... You know, it happens in Hollywood, dude. Like, you're aging, the roles dry up, you know, you're out of a few hits. Like, he was never that massive a name. But he's done well for himself now. Okay, Stu, so I think we'll wrap that up with a bow, and then we'll turn to the rest of our show. Agreed?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, welcome back. Welcome back from the spoiler review. The biggest spoiler of all is we agreed, Stu, I think, at 9.5 out of 10. I'm going to hold you to that, my friend. I feel like I've grounded you for an extra half point. I just feel like you're there's some comments you make. Can we talk about the spoiler review after the spoiler review is over?
That would be a spoiler review. We can't spoiler a spoiler review.
Okay, I suppose so. It's so confusing. Can't. It's like you've got to lock yourself in the bubble and you've got to say it all at once. It's like a time machine. It's like a time capsule. It's very confusing for me. But anyway, I think we've said all we need to say about the movie. Like, our basic message is go see it.
Oh, obviously. Go and see this movie. Go and see it multiple times.
That's true. Turning away from the one topic of our discussion so far, which is Spider-Man Homecoming, which we reviewed quite well, we've actually got a controversy of the week, Stu, which is... This has actually been a light news week for Lois Lane over here. I've had trouble, digging up news.
Yeah, which does tend to happen every time we get a big movie release.
Exactly.
And all the studios go quiet. They stop telling everyone problems.
Yeah, they don't want any bad news leaking out. Amy Pascal's been quiet.
Which is a modern miracle in itself.
There hasn't been more backflips from her or Foggy on the Sony spin-off
she's
movies.
Not just creating news this week. Well done, Amy. Well done.
Yeah, Amy, well done, Amy.
You've played a whole week of not just making shit up.
Now, Stu, the controversy of this week, and I'm going to turn to this thing on Smash Page. It involves Howard Chaykin, who's an acclaimed comic book artist and writer for many years.
Yeah.
And he wrote things and drew things like American Flag. He's done plenty of things. He's done The Shadow. He's done stuff at Marvel. He did like an Avengers in the 1950s. He's done many things. He's like an older established creator. He did Satellite Sam with Matt Fraction a few years ago.
Yep.
Now, I'm going off this article on Smash Pages, which my friends at Here Synergy pointed me to. And I'll read off, Stu, just so we get the context of what it is. It's about his comic, which is called Divided States of America, and a controversial cover. Now, released in Image Comics September 2017 solicitations, the original cover to Divided States of Hysteria? How come it's Divided States of Hysteria? Sometimes they call it Divided States of America, other times they call it Divided States of Hysteria. I don't know. Number 4, which featured an image of a Pakistani man being lynched, his pants down with his genitals mutilated, and the tag name with the slur Paki on it, which was on the cover.
Yeah.
It's a lot of information to take on a fucking cover. But anyway, that was the cover, and that was the... The cover was met with criticism from creators, fans, and critics. These reactions followed quickly on the heels of negative reactions to the first issue, which I think had been released, and its portrayal of a trans sex worker being attacked. So people were upset that he had a trans sex worker. That was the first thing being attacked in it. So they were up in arms about that. And then the cover came out, and it was covered on Bleeding Cool. Like, you would have thought the president got shot. They were reporting on it every day with these updates that were just basically the same fucking story.
To be honest, this is one of the most racist things I've ever heard. Like, how this got past any editor ever.
Well, there are, dude, I can answer that question for you. There are no editors at Image. Like, you technically, you, this is, okay, just to give some context. With Image Comics, say if you or I, okay, did it, imagine we're a creative team, okay? Mm-hmm. And we wrote a comic and drew a comic and we took it to Image. And Image agreed to publish it, but we do all the other work. There is no real editor attached to it.
No, but there is someone at Image that says...
Yes, to publishing.
Yes.
Yeah, but there's a fairly... Like, Howard Chaykin is a very, very sort of respected and controversial and a big figure in the industry.
Look, I don't give one flying fuck, to be honest with you.
Fair enough.
If this guy's going to put this kind of material on anything...
Yeah, dude, fair enough.
He shouldn't see the light of day. That's disgusting.
Okay, so, all right, well, this is our conversation. So... I think it's interesting. Like,
well, to be honest with you, whoever let this go is just as bad, though.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's why there was people on Image.
I'm glad this was pulled. This should have been pulled.
Well, they did pull it, and they replaced it for the sake of transparency. They didn't initially do anything, and then eventually they sort of released a bit of an apology. And instead of that cover, which I agree is very confronting and shocking, like I'm not rushing out to buy it. They're replacing it with an image of an American eagle and predator drone, you know, aircraft.
Oh, look, yeah. I mean, what they replace it with doesn't really matter at this stage.
Mm.
The fact that first image came out
is
just terrible.
Although, can I? Okay, so we've got the pin over there. Now, none of this, I'm not. I've actually never read anything by Howard Chaykin I've ever liked. He's very political. It's political satire, kind of his stock in trade. Confrontation is another big part of his thing. He's had a long career. He is a very, you know, he's got an art style I don't particularly enjoy either. But he's an acclaimed creator, okay? And he has carved out a niche for himself in this thing. Here's two questions, okay? And we say this as white, middle, you know, I guess middle class guys or whatever we are. You know, we're white, standard, you know what I mean? Neither of us are trans, etc. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? You're laughing at me, but you know what I mean? Like, we're saying this is a straight white man, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, so we're not the most empowered people on this planet, exactly. Unnecessarily so.
Yeah, exactly. So we come from, they say in today's language, a position of privilege, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So the first thing, though, is, okay, he's doing this, from what I gather in reading some background material, I haven't read the issues, but it's like a dystopian future, yada, yada, yada. Now, do you have any, like, I agree the cover's very confronting, and people are saying there's no context. Here's my point, which I've heard others say. It's a cover. It's meant to lure you in. Like, Stu, look at this. You're looking at Spider-Man on the cover of Amazing Spider-Man, which we're doing today. It's a picture of Spider-Man. You don't see a fucking paragraph going, this is Spider-Man. You know, he's walking down a wall. You just see Spider-Man with people webbed and he's holding in a ball. Like, a cover is to attract attention. Do you know what I mean?
True, but I'm also not seeing anything that's racially specific that vilifies anyone that comes from a certain country.
Sure.
That is...
Yeah, but
just blatantly racist. There's no redeeming factor.
Well, but
if the story wanted to be about this...
Yeah, the story is about
more
that kind of stuff.
Okay.
That, but
if
I
he
think
wants
it is,
to give
man.
Context in the story...
But I think he does.
Fine, but you can't put that on a cover.
But can't you? Because...
No, you can't.
Okay, well...
Like, if we've learned anything this week, it's that you can't do that.
I hear you. I'm not about to do it. I'm sort of just trying to go the other route, where to me, I always tend to think, like, this is a, you know, that they are artists, they are doing this, they are telling a story. You can't tell the full reason for why that's on a cover, like any confrontational cover, okay? This is particularly extreme. Like, this doesn't attract me at all. It repels me. It doesn't attract me. I'm just trying to go from the perspective of an artist, okay? Many a cover is, it's meant to draw you in. It's meant to, you know, but you contextualize it by reading the material inside it. Like, that's the story. Do you hear what I'm saying? Like the story is this paranoid, dystopian,
yes,
crazy future.
What they put on the cover wasn't something to draw you in. It was just an outright racist slur.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to say is it not possible? Like, yes, it is totally possible.
It is possible that they tried to do the right thing by making something provocative that you would buy.
Yeah, that's what I would have expected. I don't. Yeah, my takeaway isn't that he's this crazy racist who's just going, look at my crazy racism. Like, yes, there's always that chance. But, like, I don't read it as a hate pamphlet. I read it as the guy's written a comic, he's putting a cover on it to draw attention or whatever. And hopefully the what do you call it? Like,
look, if you want to do that, that's a legitimate method. This is not the execution.
Yeah.
The way he did it is disgusting. You can't.
Okay. Now, okay.
You can't do it.
All right, fair enough. Well, that answers the first question. But what about, because I'm sort of go deeper into it. I go a little bit into, like, the artist is telling a tale. Like, an art is designed. Like, I will say this, because, I mean, I write, you know, and I've written, like, 4 books. Like, the thing is, not everything, like, this is something that I think is forgotten in today's world, which is very, very sensitive, okay? When you are writing, a lot of art is meant to confront. That's been the story of art through the ages. Like, honestly, and frankly, where people say, oh, we draw the line here, not every artist draws the line at the same place. Like, that's half the point of it. A lot of the time in art, you are pushing against the boundaries of what would be considered good taste. That's a common theme through centuries of art. That's all.
Yeah, but this isn't about taste. This is...
Well, that's what a lot of people have said. It's in very poor taste. And I'm like, I don't like it. I'm just giving you that sort of alternative viewpoint, you know?
Yeah, but I just, this is not tasteful in any way. This is not pushing the boundaries in any particular way. Mm. People have done racist things before. They're going to do them in the future.
Okay.
I said, if this was in the middle of a comic and you only saw it if you bought it.
What if it's in the comic and it's not on the cover? To be honest,
the racist slur is still a bit too far.
Yeah.
But if it was in context in the middle of a comic that you already bought,
yeah,
and you've bought into this... kind of system that he's set up and the story that he's telling.
I think it's a pretty crazy political dystopian future.
Then I suppose it is more acceptable. To be honest, I don't think this is ever acceptable.
Yeah, okay. But, okay,
But there are some times where you just can't put that out there as a cover.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Could you imagine walking in your comic book store and seeing something that racially vilifies a certain country or population like that?
It's very...
Kids are going to be in this comic book store.
Well, I mean, it's not the first... Like, to be honest, it's not the first comic that would be sold in, like, a plastic bag or whatever. There's been many comics through history. Like, there's been many controversial covers, you know, done before.
Yeah,
okay. I've got more to this question, though, because I kind of wanted to explore this a little bit. Okay, now turning to the other segment, which was in the first issue, with the trans sex worker being attacked. Now, I want to say something here. People were up in arms about that, but what if that's serving the story? Like, I can think of Dark Knight Returns. Frank Miller has the scene with the, I don't know what she was, if she was transvestite or whatever she was, the chick, and she's topless, and she's got the swastika on, and she's, like, shooting up the place, and Batman comes in and beats the shit out of her. Do you remember that scene? Now, what I'm saying to you is... They're painting a very, like in both of these things, it seems they're painting a very dark world, a very cruel world, which in some ways, Stu, if we strip away all the sugar and spice, the world can be a very, very dark and violent place for a lot of people, a lot of subcultures and a lot of nations and people. Like, people are dying in wars while we're sitting here talking. You know what I mean? And they're getting raped and they're getting killed, etc. Like, if we live in, like, we do live in a privileged situation. We're sitting in an office, we're just chatting. There are people literally dying and bleeding while we're talking. Do you know what I mean? Like, the world isn't all sugar and spice, you know?
Yeah.
Sugar and sweet. So...
So why pollute it with more of this crap?
I don't know. Like, dude, I mean, come on. You can't... Dystopian futures are pretty stock in trade in, like, sci-fi fantasy, man. I mean, I write them myself, dude.
That's true, but there's no need...
People get entertained by them, and sometimes they push questions. Like, I'm not saying that this is the greatest comic of all time. I haven't read it. I have my suspicions it's probably not. I haven't liked a lot of Chaykin's work. You know, I'm not really big into political satire. That's his stock in trade. Now, I'm just saying, do you have any problem in the context of a story with, like, the trans worker being attacked if it's in the story? I'm not sure if I have a huge problem with it. I sort of think he's put it in there.
Look, obviously, if it's in a story, it will depend on the context.
Yeah.
If the attack is motivated by good people and it's meant to be a cleansing of sorts, terrible.
Yeah, that's shocking.
If it's motivated by bad people because they're picking on someone...
Well, what if it's this?
For no other reason than they are transgender.
What if it's this? What if they're transgender, they're being attacked, and, like, Batman turns around and beats up the attackers? Like, I don't know.
No, that's not a problem, but that's not part of what this story is about.
Well, we don't know. I'm saying the trans sex worker is attacked in the issue, and I don't know what happens, but I'm just saying there's a lot of ways it could play out.
The fact that it's making controversial news means that they're being attacked because they're transgender.
Maybe. Shoot. See, that's the thing these days, man. People get it very, very politically correct now. They're like, oh, you can't have someone who's gay attacked because that's just another gay hate crime being perpetuated, yada, yada, yada.
Well, no.
They're walking in with a big agenda. People are walking in now with a real loaded agenda both ways of this discussion. And I personally feel at times, as someone who does write myself and has written a lot, honestly, I really believe this. It's really important to really not censor the work too much at all. You've got to be prepared to push the boundaries. You've got to have a bit of courage as an artist, you. Like, it can't just be down the middle boring because that's where you'll get at Marvel. You know, we'll just go right down the middle. We won't try to offend anyone. And we get a very bland overall feel a lot of the time. And that isn't really what art's about a lot of the time.
Sorry, but people that try to cover up their mediocre work as art...
Well, I don't know, man.
Those guys that just say, I'm not censoring myself, it's art...
Well,
those guys need to grow a fucking pair and learn what art is.
To be honest,
what they're doing is peddling hate in the form of media.
I hear what you're saying, but Stuart, a lot of books that have been banned, like through history, are books that are great literature. Like Huckleberry Finn has been banned many times, and it's an American classic, you know, and it pushed boundaries at the time. Like that's what I'm saying. Like a lot of art has done that through history, not just in the last 20 years in comics. I'm talking about like. That's a lot of the time stuff that is claimed works has pushed against the conventions of the time.
Look, and that's true, but 99% of the time, the stuff that gets banned needs to be banned.
Gee, I'm of the opposite opinion. I agree.
There is not much classic literature that gets banned and then people kind of rediscover it years later and say, oh, this was actually amazing. I can't believe they banned it back then.
But even at the time, dude, they face, like, you know, repercussions. There's been many artists who've struggled against repercussions of, like, the societies they're in. You know, like, we live in a free democratic society, as democratic as it's going to get. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's become more corporatized, but it's as democratic as it's going to get. There have been so many artists and writers and stuff that have struggled against persecution, like, in the last 200 years. Like, it's quite a common theme. Like, people have gone to jail for it. You know, people have been killed for it. Like, I'm not a believer in burning books and banning. I've got to be honest. Like, there are lines to draw, like, definitely. Like, you know, child pornography. There are huge red alerts. But in the content, I would rather have more uncomfortable work out there than less and it be down to, like, let's start censoring. I think it's a very dangerous way for society to go. I've always felt that. That's half the reason I think we do the show, in my opinion. Like, we've got to at times, like, you know.
I agree that you can't start burning books and you can't start censoring people.
Yeah.
But by the same token, you cannot have people just openly preaching hate.
Good point.
That benefits no one. It doesn't benefit society in any way, shape, or form.
Mm. And there's a lot of hate. And look, what you say is true. There's a lot of hate.
When this story comes out and they're vilifying anyone that comes from Pakistan.
Yeah.
Like, that's just stupid and hateful.
Yeah. Okay.
There is no one saying this is a great work of art.
But no one's read it. No one's read it.
No one should read this. No one should ever read that.
Let me just... I want to give the counterpoint, though, because I think it... Well, I want it to be lost in the mix.
Dave, I'm sorry. With this honest... There is no counterpoint for racism.
Right. But no one's read the issue, is what I'm saying.
It's blatant racism.
I get you that the cover is, but no one's read the interior yet. It's not even out. You know? Like, you don't know what's in the interior of the comic. The guy's not on record as an acclaimed racist. This isn't coming from a right-wing, like, nationalist leader who's putting out hate pamphlets. This is from a guy who's been in the industry for, like, 30, 40 years. I'm just giving that alternate point that how can you really contextualize something without reading the material, you know, of a 22-page comic? Yes, it's a shocking cover. I agree. I mean, if I'm the editor, I wouldn't have ticked it off. I think it's fucking... red alerts going all over the place. But I do have a period where I'm like, if Howard Chaykin, this is what I'm saying, if Howard Chaykin is like, this is fucking happening, this is my vision, we're doing this, I'm prepared to suffer the repercussions because freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom without consequence. Like, there is consequence to what you say, okay? But speech should be free, okay? So he puts it out there, like, he's the one taking the financial risk, okay? It either bombs or it doesn't, and then he takes the heat either way. Like, I'm not sure that I want to be in a society that's effectively blocking that actually being released because I feel like if it just bombs and it doesn't do anything, and all it does is kick up a bit of controversy and we move on, which is probably what's going to happen here. Like, in a week's time, we'll be talking about something else. I'm not sure I want to censor, because it's a very dangerous word to use and to get into, that we start censoring down to the exact political mores of the time today, 2017, because it's going to be different in 2022 and 2027. Like, it's going to change. You know, I'm not sure censorship's the way to go. Let it come out. Let the public react is more what I would say.
What I'm saying is, you know the political stance at the moment. You know that this is not going to be accepted.
We're in a very politically sensitive climate when it comes to the Twitter sphere.
Exactly. You know this stuff isn't going to be widely accepted. If you need this to tell your story, you're a shit storyteller.
I don't know.
If this is the crutch you need to rely on, you need to rely on saying something that's so racially offensive that it draws people's attention.
I think
you are not good at your job.
I think a lot of people are kicking up even more so at the trans-sex stuff than anything, because that's a very hot-button topic as well.
Like, regardless, whether it's gender inequality, whether it's racial inequality.
Yeah, but okay, but like, okay, well, let's move on.
Whatever it is that he's using as his crutch.
But, well, okay, let's switch the conversation a bit to something else. You know Alan Moore? Okay.
Yeah.
Alan Moore, we all know that Alan Moore is a fucking genius comic book writer who's a bit fucking nuts as well. Would you agree? That's the general consensus.
Sure.
Alan Moore, for all his great work, often often in many of his stories, there's rape. Okay, it's quite a common theme. It's in Watchmen. It's in many of Alan Moore's stories. Now, there's the argument that gets sort of peddled, and I think it has some merit, frankly, that he uses rape as a crutch.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, but here's a question. Would you censor Watchmen because of that, if that came out today? Would you be like, oh, we can't have that because...
Well, there's two things that...
Comedian rapes.
There's two things that are completely different.
I'm just saying, okay.
The first is that it's never on a cover. He has never put rape on a cover of a comic.
Good point.
Because that's extreme.
Okay, but... Okay.
The second is, in the story, he vilifies it.
I know.
It's the same as watching Law and Order on TV, where they vilify these acts immediately.
See, I agree with you. That's what I'm trying to say. In Law and Order SVU, for example, every single episode, it starts out, someone's a victim of sexual assault.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, we don't know...
And then there is an entire hour long devoted to them saying these people are scum.
Michelle and I have watched a lot of Law and Order SVU. Okay? They go with that concept in a lot of different fucking directions.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good show, frankly. Now, here's what I'm saying. No one's saying ban Law and Order SVU, but people do turn to, they have turned to Watchmen and other Alan Moore works where rape is vilified in the context and still saying, this is the old trope of rape. Like, why don't buy the book? They say that. Boycott the book. But why are they saying that? But they're not saying boycott Law and Order SVU. What's the difference? To me, there's not much difference.
The demographic is the difference.
Maybe, but...
Law and Order is shown at certain times at night.
Yeah.
They know it's got a rating.
Watchmen's always had like a mature content feel to it. I think it's got a mature content warning on it.
I know, but a 10-year-old could walk in and buy it.
Oh, come on. A 10-year-old could watch this. Law and Order SVU. Nothing's stopping them. Law and Order SVU is on cable. You can watch it, find it easily. A 10-year-old can watch Law and Order SVU if they want to.
The difference is, in our society, we've kind of put parental blocks in place for that kind of stuff, for that content. And
but would you agree with me that a 10-year-old, if they wanted to, could find it pretty easily? They could.
Yeah, but no 10-year-old would want to find that.
Yeah, okay. But
and a 10-year-old is less likely to stumble upon a show that shows up at 8, 10, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
But is a 10-year-old any more likely to go and read, seek out Watchmen? Because we hear there's a controversial rape scene. A comic book store?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
You could easily stumble across a... colourful comic book that's just sitting there on the shelves.
Even still, I don't think it should be censored. Like, frankly, I really don't. Like, if you're tired... Like, here's my point. If you're tired of the trope of Alan Moore using rape in a story, and I can understand that you are, don't buy the comic. Don't support the work. See, that's my point. Let the audience be the determinant. If the audience is so enraged by Howard Chaykin or so enraged by Alan Moore or whoever else, don't buy the book. Like, that's the boycott. Just don't buy it.
No, I think just putting hate out there in the world is not good.
But hate is such an amorphous term creatively. If you're dealing in conflict, you often have a bad guy and a good guy. It often does come
down
to...
Look, when we're talking about racially vilifying people, that's not conflict.
Well, I'm just...
This is not done anywhere near as classily as conflict.
Dude, there's a lot of...
This is not art. This is the lowest form of work right now.
Yeah, I'm just giving you a sort of a bigger picture perspective than just these. It's very dangerous. Like, are you still saying Watchmen's okay, put on the shelves? Yes or no, Stu? Because it comes down to that. Are you okay with putting Watchmen on the shelf, or do you want it censored because it has something in it that's, you
As
know,
soon as Watchmen puts rape on its cover, it needs to be taken off the shelves. Until then, it's fine. It's in context.
But what do you
it's
mean by vilifying it? Do you mean the rape scene?
They don't show anything graphically, right? And when they do mention it,
he sexually assaults her.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah,
but it's immediately vilified.
I get that. I get that, dude. But what are you saying? If they put it on the cover, the scene of him like hitting her or something, take it off the shelf then?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm just trying to just work out exactly where we are.
Should never make it to a shelf. That's.
I don't know. See, look, I don't want to. I'm not coming this from the perspective of I want to see it and even want to consume it. Like, and to be honest, that moment in Watchmen for me is uncomfortable. You know, like, it's an uncomfortable situation because the comedian at times in the story, as repellent as he is, you'd have to agree, has some of the best moments in Watchmen. He does. But he has probably one of the most uncomfortable moments, and there's many other works that Alamore does where there's a similar scene like that. Not all Alamore works. I've read a lot of them where he doesn't have it, but he does. It's a trope that pops up. I still think if you're tired of that trope and don't want it, don't support the book. Like, people were calling, just to wrap this image with this topic with a bow, people were calling for Image to be boycotted, all Image titles, because of this. Now, to me, you're already not buying it. You know, so you've already boycotted the person who's going to benefit from it if you buy it. Why would, you know, fucking someone else, like Matt Fraction working at Image, or Kelly Sue DeConnick, or Jason Aaron, or whoever.
Look, the reason in this case is because Image okayed this.
But Stu, what I'm trying to say
Image
is,
said, yeah, this is fine, put it on the cover.
But they give a lot of creative control to creators. That's part of the reason we've had so many great works from Image, because they give so much creative control. Do you understand?
That's
By
true.
Giving creative control, Stu, you give the danger that something's going
to
come
but
out
they are
a
also
bit more scary.
Supplying these guys the ability to get their book in thousands of stores worldwide.
But that's the price you pay for having freedom of expression. It's not always going to be comfortable. I'll always, like, dude, you know, one of the lawyers who represented OJ, okay, and the guy who did Reversal of Fortune, okay, he was a famous lawyer. He's in Reversal of Fortune. Alan Dershowitz, I think, is his name. He's a famous Jewish lawyer, et cetera, et cetera. He actually, in the 80s, campaigned for neo-Nazis to be able to parade down the street because he's like, it's still freedom of speech. Do you see what I'm saying? For a lot of people, like, the civil liberties question is actually quite a heavy one, and I'm sort of on that side too. At times, as repellent as something can be in art and, like, in expression, by having the freedom to do it, you still get other great works. It's part of the process, man. If you censor too closely, dude, look, you get a very stale and very bland.
But the more you say it's okay because only people that buy it will want it and that will weed it out, that idea still gets this concept, still gets this property out there more and more and more.
But if you restrict
it, and the more we see it, the more we become the more we become
complacent. What if you restrict it? And if you restrict, like, say you ban this, say Image ban this, and they also ban Sex Criminals by Fraction, and they ban Kelly Sue DeConnick's work, and they ban someone else's work, they ban Southern Bastards because it's all a bit too political. Are you okay with that? Just because there's some confronting topics, like there's some confronting
Dave,
topics.
I know you're trying to give me an alternate view here.
I'm just, yeah,
but you're pushing these stupid scenarios right now.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like,
and it honestly sounds like you're trying to support this guy and say that racism is okay in comics.
100% no, Stu. 100% not. I'm not.
And we just need to move on and just
okay. All right,
this should not happen.
I'm just giving an alternate.
What
sort
he
of,
did was wrong. Image
okay.
fucked up. They right. fixed it. Now they need to move on and not let this guy get away with this shit anymore.
Well, he probably needs, if they're not looking to, you know, if they're not willing to take the controversy that comes with a cover like that, then I agree, they shouldn't have released it. That's what it comes down to. Like, I don't understand, I don't understand the point. You put out something that's so controversial to cause controversy, and then it causes it, and then you immediately pull it. The whole thing, it's like an exercise in futility. Like, you're not standing behind the work. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you put something out, maybe it engenders discussion amongst us. Like, would we have read Divided States of... We don't even know if it's called Divided States of America or Divided States of Hysteria. It's called two different things in one article. Okay? Would we have been discussing it? Probably not. It's not really now. Political satire by Howard Chaykin is not on top of my list. You know, like, so maybe they put it out there to get discussion going, and then they pulled it just as quickly. I don't know, man. I do want to, though, I agree with you that, like, I'm uncomfortable with racial, you know, hate, and especially uncomfortable with, like, gay and lesbian issues, like, hate crimes against them, okay? And trans crimes as well, which this guy definitely has struck against. So he struck against some things I hold very dear, okay? Some freedoms, you know, and segments of the population that it hurts me to have to talk about how he has conveyed it, but I still always do feel that we need to be careful about censorship, and that's just one of the things I really do believe, you know.
So yeah, that's why I have a fundamental... Just blatantly saying we can't have censorship does not justify people putting out this kind of material. You can't have it both ways.
Do you have... No, but that's...
You can't...
Well, I don't know, dude. Like,
you can't have people just putting out whatever they want and say it's freedom of speech.
He's putting it out. Issue one's out. And the controversy with issue one, Stu, was that a trans sex worker was attacked. That was the controversy there. Do you have any issues with that, really? Or do you not have an issue with that? And
look, Dave, I think we both know it comes down to context. Yeah, neither of us have read it.
That's a good point.
Talking endlessly about this is not going to fix anything. This guy is a fuckwit. I'm not going to read anything of his.
Well, dude,
never going to read this.
Dude, you're probably not missing much, man.
I'm not going to read it.
I'll be honest. It sounds like I've gone into
If you want to read it and you want to put it on the show next week, go for it. I'm happy for you to read it and review it. I'm not going to be joining you.
I don't think I will, man.
I think this
guy... I've never read anything by Howard Chaykin I've liked. I'll be honest with you. I don't even like his art. You know, he's an acclaimed artist, so I don't want to disrespect him, but I've never personally dug it. You know, to me, this is an example rather than just, like, actually caring too much about Howard Chaykin's actual work.
Look, all of this comes down to trying to analyze something in blacks and whites.
Yeah.
When I say you can't view this...
This is grey, though, man, to me. This is morally
quite
grey.
That's exactly what I've been saying this whole time. When I say you can't view this, you say that's censorship. Which is the most black and white term you can use in saying, if this is censorship, then all of censorship is bad.
What's censorship? Censorship is like stopping material being released. Like, it's...
Yeah, exactly. Material. You've just taken any kind of shade of grey into a complete black and white.
Well, I'm...
All
I'm,
censorship
I'm
is removing content, I'm, and that is bad.
It's like a spectrum. It's like the autism spectrum or something that's like that. I'm on the spectrum where I am very vigilant against censorship. I understand that some stuff needs to be censored, but I'm not sure if this passes the threshold, frankly. I think, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people are on different thresholds with this. This is very much a political kind of debate. Like, there's not really a right or wrong
what
answer.
What you just said then, that some things do need to be censored?
Well, child pornography, for example, would be something. But it's still a gradient. There's still a gradient.
At what point do you stop that?
I don't think this passes the threshold. See, I think this falls under freedom of speech. Like, honestly.
There is a point... that you have to cross. That point is constantly moving, right?
Yeah. I don't believe this passes the point. And the fact that it's being released means it hasn't passed the point. Like, the government hasn't stepped in and banned this book. Do you know what I mean? Where it's being released, like, with some controversy attached to it.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, Al-Qaeda releases videos. Like, ISIS releases videos. That's not...
Yeah.
That's the lowest fucking bar you can get. We're releasing a podcast. No one's censoring us.
Yes, but they could, Stu.
No, they couldn't.
Well, I guess.
The internet is open.
All right. Well,
like, they can take down a post, but we can repost it.
I'm glad it is, man. I'm glad it is. I just think, like, I don't mean to pontificate too much longer, and I certainly don't mean to defend Howard Chaykin too much longer, but people have fought and died for the liberties that we have.
I walked through a county courthouse square. On a park bench, an old man was sitting there. I said, "Your old courthouse is kind of run down." He said, "No, it'll do for our little town." I said, "Your old flagpole has leaned a little bit, and that's a ragged old flag you got hanging on it." He said, "Have a seat." And I sat down. "Is this the first time you've been to our little town?" I said, "I think it is." He said, "I don't like to brag, but we're kind of proud of that ragged old flag."
They honestly have, and we shouldn't be so willing
people
to surrender.
People have not fought and died so that you could racially vilify people from Pakistan?
No, but the freedom of...
Or so that you could mutilate transgender people? Look, so you could attack, like...
The actual contents of what we're talking about, I personally find quite repellent, frankly. I'm arguing from a more philosophical point of view. Okay, I hope you can tell that. I'm not arguing from the pro-Howard Chaykin fucking camp at all. The guy seems like a bit of a fuckwit.
The guy seems like a giant fuckwit.
Anyway, fuck him. You know, the book's out there. We're not reviewing it. Because I frankly don't want to waste my money. We actually get free copies of it because we're on the Image press list. But I do want to put a bit of a plug in for Image, though, as well. Away from this particular issue, I think one of the really unfair things in this is to try to boycott other creators who aren't in any way attached to this book at all. Like, they've got no relation to this. Trying to boycott their works is a mark of absolute stupidity and not even understand the issue. Don't buy this book. You know, if you really hate this material, and I don't blame you because I'm not buying it either, don't buy this book. Don't give him your fucking $3 or whatever it is, you know? But I just really don't want it to be that, like, all of a sudden we're calling the question Southern Bastards, which has got racial stuff in it as well, or Sex Criminals, which is a very, you know, like, it deals with, like, some fairly sort of like hot button topics regarding gender and sex. You know, like, because things are confronting doesn't mean they should be banned. Some questions need to be asked. Sometimes it's to elicit an emotional response from the audience. It's part of the process of creating.
You know? Look, yeah, but again, you've just broken it down to black and white. You've just said...
No, I'm just giving you my view. I'm just wrapping it up with a bow. I just want to leave the listener with at least where I'm coming from. Is what I'm trying to say, Stu.
I feel like there is no one side to this argument.
No, there's not.
So picking a side is...
No, I'm trying to be very neutral, Stu.
That's not coming across here, but okay.
But you know what, I'm trying to be quite open-minded to something I find quite repellent. Okay?
Sure, interesting exercise, but in this case, just fuck them.
Fair enough. Okay, anyway, that was Controversy of the Week, Stu, which I found exhausting, frankly. Like, it was one of the most exhausting. I almost didn't include it in the show because I was just like, oh, my God, can we even, like, stand the controversy? We've actually got another controversy coming up too, but it's less so, but I still want your views. We've got one where I think you're going to have to – you're a little bit of – oh, no, you're not – I was going to call you fence-sitter, but you're not fence-sitter. You actually had an opinion there, didn't you?
Thank you for noticing, yeah.
Was I fence-sitter?
It felt like it at times, yeah.
I often have trouble deciding what to vote when I get to the ballot box. I'm always
doesn't
like,
surprise
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I'm always like,
does
oh
not
my
surprise
God.
Me.
I just always feel like, oh my God, like I need more information. Stu, turning to something a bit lighter, although I still found quite annoying. Rosario Dawson exits new
Rosario.
Rosario Dawson exits New Mutants and Alice Braga.
Yeah.
Okay. Disappointing news for me because I do like Rosario Dawson quite a lot. Actually, I found her very hot. Actually,
just not enough to learn her first name.
Oh, whatever, Stu. Like, I'll give me a break.
Oh,
there.
Rosie
like,
Dawson.
Breaking my balls, like you know. I've been on record before as liking Rosario Dawson as the night nurse in the Netflix shows, and before that in the movie called Rent, which I've also heavily liked her in. And she's a fine actress, and for me, a bit of a loss.
Do we know what she was meant to be playing in New Mutants?
There's no announcement at all of what she was playing or what Alice Braga is doing either.
Yeah. She's left it. She's got other things going. Who?
Night nurse.
Like, if she's not connected to any character, this is no loss, right?
No, totally not. She was. I don't even think she'd officially signed. I think she was in heavy talks that broke down.
Right.
There was a rumour I heard, or just a speculation is actually a better word to describe it, that perhaps Marvel had thrown us some more money, saying, like, we don't want to confuse the audience. You're attached to the Netflix properties. You're all over them. We don't want you going over to Fox, starting a new franchise there, while we're still building over in Netflix. That's, you know, good for her if that's the case, or it could just be that she just decided it wasn't worth the time.
She could have had other stuff.
Yeah.
Other movies, other TV properties, who knows?
Yeah. She's a good actress, though. I mean, I'll say it again. I've always found her very attractive. Like, that's always been something I've always found with her. Anyway, turning to... I'm doing the news, Stu. It's a difficult news night over here. It's like I'm fucking under fire, like constantly. Like every word I say is like I feel like there's a panel judging me. Now, Stu, Patty Jenkins teases Wonder Woman 2. She hasn't signed papers with Warners yet, and I think that would be wise to pay the lady and make this deal happen.
Of course. She was a wild success with Wonder Woman.
I don't think she could be more successful. I think she did a fantastic
job. And so much of that was because of Patty Jenkins.
Yeah, you put this in the hands of another director. Can you imagine, Stu, that, like, if Warners weren't smart enough to pony up whatever the fucking salary is, which is, not going to be anything compared to what Wonder Woman's taken, if they hired, like, a male director, it would be a public relations disaster.
It would be. Like, that's not necessarily going to mean a bad job.
No. I just mean in perception. With fans.
Yeah. I mean, right now, Patty Jenkins can do her wrong.
Yeah, I hope she signs. I
really hope that Warners get her back.
Yeah.
And they get her for maybe another two pictures and do a trilogy.
Maybe that's what's holding the deal down. They're trying to sign up for a multi-picture now, and she's like, look, I want a lot for that because that's years of my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For all we know, they could be signing up for Justice League 2.
That's what I'm saying. It also wouldn't surprise me if they try to get her in on another Justice League type movie or maybe something else in Warner where they can bring in Wonder Woman as a supporting character or a cameo kind of thing.
And also, let's be honest, I think it's been 40 years since she's directed. It could be another property with Warners that's not related to DCU.
Look, it could be.
A multi-picture deal, like Nolan always did. He did a Batman movie, then he would do Inception, for example. One for them, one for me sort of thing.
Yeah. I think that's a lot more likely than her signing like a six-picture deal kind of...
For the DCU.
For DCU. I think that's pretty much out of the question with Patty Jenkins and the way she's worked.
Surely she'll want... Because, I mean, her previous movie was Monster. It was a fucking Academy Award winner. It was a great movie.
Yeah.
Dude, we talk about confrontational material. Monster, it was very confrontational and very raw. The story of a lesbian serial killer killing, like, the Johns.
Mm.
I mean, that was a confronting movie. Great performance from Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the best movies. I would put that in my top 20 movies since 2000, for sure. It made a powerful impact on me. And to not work, not to direct for 14 years of films, that speaks to an incredible amount of sexism in the industry, to me.
Well, I mean, we don't know all the details about why she didn't... Because obviously after Monster, when you've just directed...
She did some TV.
An Academy Award-winning movie, there's going to be offers on the table.
You would think so.
There's going to be... Like, when you've just won an Academy Award...
Didn't she almost do Thor? I think she almost did Thor and pulled out.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, I don't know what the...
What the ins and outs were.
...scape was and why she couldn't do other movies or why she chose not to.
I believe she did some Game of Thrones.
Yeah, she's done a bit of TV here and there, but... Look, who knows whether it was her, whether it was the studios, whether it was a combination.
Yeah, well, I dare say I'm sure it was a combination. Yeah. It takes two to tango for a deal not to happen. But regardless, what I'm saying is she's a huge talent. She did Monster. 40 years later, comes back with Wonder Woman, which is just an enormous success. I mean, I think now probably they're like, okay, this woman's got real serious talent. Like, let's sign her.
I mean, look, I think everyone knew she had talent when Monster came out.
Definitely.
I don't think there was any question after that movie came out that she was a talented director.
Mm.
So it kind of worries me that she hasn't done anything since then.
I find it baffling, frankly.
I don't know. Maybe she's asking too much. Maybe the studios are wanting too much. Who knows?
Yeah, we don't know. But
I doubt that she's going to sign any multi-picture deals just based on that giant gap that she's had.
She's obviously got a sort of pick and choose mentality. Like, she's just not just doing the next project that comes along. She obviously picks her projects with a great care, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, yeah.
That's what her resume reads like. It's a strange resume. You don't often see that with directors, like big time directors. Like, no. You will see huge gaps at the end of their careers. You know what I mean? Most guys and girls, and it's mostly guys because it is a sex industry. A firing.
Well, especially when we're looking at the end of their careers. These are guys that were around in the 60s, 70s, and sexism was blatant and rampant back then.
Very true, very true.
I mean, a lot of those guys, it was a case of, I want to retire, but then a few years later, they kind of get bored.
Exactly.
They get an itch to tell some kind of story.
Then you get your Woody Allens who do a film a year. They rarely miss. You get those guys who just always have a film.
Yeah.
you know. And now Woody's like 80 plus, probably slowed down a little bit, but he's still releasing on about 18 months to 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
You guys who just like, who they love to work. They live to work, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, interesting. Well, anyway, I personally want to say, like, on Signal of Doom, I wish her all the best. I want to see this deal happen. I would actually like the idea of her doing a Justice League 2, you know? Because obviously I would say more than likely you would think Zack Snyder's probably out of the picture.
Yeah.
With his, you know, problems and everything.
I think, with his family problems at the moment. Yeah. And also, unfortunately, it's also how his movie's been received.
I was going to say that as well, yeah. Yeah, that's part of it.
It's not that they've been bad, but other movies have done so much better.
They've been contentious, is the word I use to describe them. Yeah. You know? Divisive is another word I use to describe. And look, Whedon's doing, he's down for Batgirl. Gee, it really, they're looking for a big name to do Justice League 2. They want to keep that freight train rolling. Apparently, I read today rumours that Matt Reeves is signing up for a trilogy of Batman movies, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, I feel like these studios are kind of always wanting to get trilogies or short stories told.
I'm down for that, man.
With a bunch of crossovers in between.
I mean,
that's what Marvel basically did.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can see all these characters now coming to the end of their contracts.
Yep.
After we've had Thor 3, Iron Man 3, Cap 3, plus all the crossover Avengers 3. So, yeah.
Good point.
They kind of want these 3 to 5 movie arcs for most of these characters before they start getting tired and they start thinking,
and they reboot.
Maybe we revamp, reboot.
Yep.
Replace.
Have we got a director attached to Captain Marvel? Is there a director attached to Captain Marvel?
With
Brie Larson? Yeah. Where is that on the schedule, Stu? Because I read rumors that the rumors that Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson, was going to come back for that, which makes sense.
Yeah, Sam Jackson's attached.
We haven't seen a lot of Sam Jackson in the Marvel Cinematic Universe recently.
No, we haven't. So Captain Marvel's 2019.
Okay, so it's still a way off, isn't it?
2 years off.
It's a long way off if you're an actor like Brie Larson. Like, she must have a lot of other projects before then. She's a pretty busy actress.
Yeah. So we've got directors Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck.
Okay, I'm not familiar with them. But anyway, I just thought of that the other day, that I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing what they do with Captain Marvel. You know, because it's a character I know next to nothing about, other than she's popular and she's pushed hard at Marvel these days and seems like a pretty cool character. Definitely going in that cosmic direction that you would like, I would think.
Oh, absolutely.
Very powerful.
It's everything you kind of want at the moment.
Hmm. I'm sort of surprised it's not sooner. Do you know what I mean? I'm surprised it's not 2018. Like, it feels a long way off.
I think it was at some point, and they kind of slid it back when they reshuffled their lineup.
Yeah.
Because obviously they also had the Inhumans movie, which has now been wiped off that slate.
And there's now a TV show that no one's pumped up about. I listened to Collider. They were not pumped talking about the trailer.
No, well, things like Black Panther kind of snuck up on how popular that movie was going to be.
Yeah.
So that got bumped up. Ant-Man was a giant success. So now there's an Ant-Man and the Wasp sequel that they never expected that's coming in around that time as well. So
good point.
I mean, they kind of had to rejig and remove these movies around, given that they'd already booked release dates for these movies.
Mm.
They planned and booked these release dates.
Got to kind of reshuffle the chef pieces around to sort of fit the available times.
Release dates that they had already scheduled and booked in.
Well, you know, Stu, like, it's good to know that it's out there in the future waiting for us, isn't it? Like, because really our year has kicked off now. We've been talking so much about what a busy year. We've now hit Spider-Man Homecoming. And think about it, Stu. We've still got Justice League to come. There's a Star Wars movie to come. Thor Ragnarok,
which is still easily my number one.
I know, Stu, it is.
Oh, I'm so excited for that movie.
There was a trailer for it in Spidey. The trailer in the screening I saw, anyway, had the trailer for...
Yeah, that was the first time I'd seen it on the big screen.
Yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
That was the first trailer in for me as well.
that was pretty good. I thought of you when it was on. I may have made
a small involuntary noise when that trailer came on.
Did you have your friend come again? The guy who was complaining that, like, the songs weren't from the 70s or from the 80s and all that?
No, that guy was not there
what
complaining
a
this time.
That is the ultimate curse of being in a public cinema, isn't it? The crazy guy who can just ruin it.
Yeah, unfortunately, my private cinema was busy that day.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, that's the price you pay for mingling with the herd. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm always like, actually, there was a moment in Spider-Man Homecoming where someone made a joke. I won't tell the joke, but it was a joke that, what was his name? Was it Ted or Ned?
Ned.
He made a joke, and the whole audience started laughing, and I realized how many people were in the cinema and from behind me and were laughing at the joke, and I got a real feeling of just, it was one of those moments where everyone's having a belly laugh.
Yeah.
And you really could feel the room was pretty much almost full. And that was a good feeling, because it wasn't like first night screening or anything. You know?
No.
It was a big cinema too.
Oh yeah.
And I really got the impression like plenty of people turning up to see this.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah.
The cinemas are busy.
No, it's good stuff. Okay, Stu, a bit of a news item here from me, and I know you probably think it's a little bit selfish. I like to keep you updated on what's happening with Punisher. Well,
yeah, I'm glad.
Coming out of Punisher, coming out of Legacy...
Wouldn't want to miss Punisher.
Punisher is being... Stu, this is for the fans. This is for the listeners out there. I'm trying to give the news here, Stu. When people do the news on, like, Channel 9, you don't hear someone coming over the top of them with sarcastic fucking comments. Like,
I would if I was employed by Channel 9. I can tell you that much.
So, anyway, Stu, Punisher is going to be War Machine. He's in the War Machine armor. This is in Marvel Legacy, where Punisher is going to be renumbered, as I was hoping. He's going to be about 217 or 218 or something.
Yep.
So an interesting one for me, that Punisher's going to be wearing the War Machine armor and I guess taking it fucking to
when
the
I
stars.
Saw that, I was actually kind of, doesn't that go against everything people love about that character?
Well, I had that initial response. I had my
so
initial.
So it's not just me going.
No.
I thought Punisher fans loved Punisher because he doesn't need...
Normally, yeah.
Fancy Iron Man suits.
It's kind of like, not my Punisher, that kind of style of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, yeah. I'm trying to be, what's the word? I'm trying to be sort of like very sort of holistic and like let it happen. But my initial reaction to if you'd see me was like, are you fucking kidding? But I kind of actually like War Machine, and I don't mind...
Of course you love War Machine. It's just Iron Man with more guns.
I told you,
like Punisher. It's like a normal person, but with more guns.
I sort of like it, because this means Punisher can go after the big baddies. He can go and take down Dr. Doom or someone now. Like, he can take it all the fucking way. So,
War Machine, no.
What, did you see the image? It was
just War Machine with a skull painted on his chest.
Like, with the skull painted on, thank you. Correct. I've always done War Machine, so... And Cheadle only made him like him more, so... I'm down for this story. I want to see what happens. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the current Punisher run. It's kind of like Ennis Light. It's not... Although I love Becky Cloonan. I really do like Becky Cloonan. I feel bad for even saying this. Critically, I mean, I'm just not a big fan of it. Like, it's okay, if you know what I mean, the current series. It's not... I heard someone describe it as a modern classic, and I'm like, oh, am I reading the same comic? I'm like, it's average. It's okay. Like, it's nothing terrible. It's all right. But, I'm interested. I'll read it and I'll see what happens. But, yeah, I want to get the story right. And I hope he does take the opportunity to go after some big baddies. Like, the concept of Punisher as War Machine going after the likes of Doctor Doom or name another fucking supervillain has some interest to me. You know, he's finally got the arsenal that he's been craving, and he takes it to the streets in a major fucking way. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he fought someone like Doom. Someone like that. I can't think of, you know, or Magneto or someone. Someone who's normally outside of his scope of normal.
I can get exactly what you're talking about, but I just love the fact that you picked the two villains that would absolutely fucking destroy both War Machine and Punisher.
Doom?
Doom would easily
Doom probably
take
would.
Both.
Doom would. Well, Magneto's not a good choice because, like...
Metal? Yeah, he's wearing metal now.
But I don't
not
know.
Not the greatest villain.
I'm trying to think of supervillains, you know.
I know exactly what you're talking about, but I just love that you've...
Well, I was going to say Kingpin, but he already goes after Kingpin.
Kingpin
normally
would be a good fit, yeah.
But he already goes after Kingpin anyway. Kingpin's one of his normal types.
I'm not saying this is a great change for him.
It's more just he's got
more
weaponry.
He can now fight Kingpin in space.
Yeah, he's just got more weaponry. There's actually a really full-on... Matt Fraction did Punisher, actually quite well, quite early, probably mid-2000s, like about 2005 or something. He actually had a short but very good run of Punisher, and in that was when Captain America, it was kind of weird, Captain America had died in the comics, like Ed Brubaker had killed him, and Punisher started wearing the Captain America outfit, and he sort of became, because Captain America's always been the guy that Frank reports to, like he's the one guy that Captain America, like, can make Frank stand down. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And because he sees him as the ultimate soldier. And so when Captain America died, it was almost like he had a bit of a breakdown and he was like, thought he was Captain America, and he was just going out there and just really, like, I don't know, just really taking it to a whole new level of fucking anger. But as in Captain America's sort of like, it was a very interesting idea that Fraction did really well. And I remember at the time being like, not my Punisher. And then I was like, actually, this is actually pretty good. Like, it was an interesting concept. I think it was in Punisher War Journal. Anyway, so I'm glad you got that locked in, Stu. We'll do it on the show soon. And it's in Marvel Unlimited, mate.
I think I'm away that week.
Imagine if you were away one week and I just did all Punisher. Every single news item was Punisher.
I would so love that. I would love that so much.
And obviously, Trade of the Week would be Punisher.
Oh, everything of the week would be Punisher.
I'd do like three trades all Punisher.
You'd have like
Chuck Dixon Punisher, yeah. Mike Baron Punisher.
Yeah, you'd have like one news item. Punisher's still here. Yes.
Punisher 17 is out. I'm looking so forward to when Punisher like 217 comes out. Like, I start talking in the hundreds again. I'm going to fucking enjoy that. And it'll be Punisher War Machine, so everything's come out of roses for me. Now, Stu, a couple of news items. I've got two linked news items here on Comic-Con San Diego. Now, one of them is just a very boring news item that Comic-Con signed to stay at San Diego for like another 5 years or something, because I think there was some talk of them going elsewhere. You know, their deals.
Yeah, but talk, it's, I doubt that would ever going to happen.
It's... But, okay, I agree with you. Because, I mean, San Diego Comic-Con, it has a place in the calendar. And people who...
Oh, it's the biggest con of the year in the world.
And it's revered.
Absolutely.
Like, the second you take it out of San Diego Comic-Con, those words away, it's just like any other Comic-Con anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but Stu, here's a news item connected to San Diego, and I want to get your views. Mile High Comics is a major, like, online... retailer, but it's also one of the biggest warehouses of comics in the world, okay? Mm-hmm. I've actually watched the guy do videos, the guy who owns it, Chuck somebody, and he's an older guy, ponytail and everything, and he's been doing it for like 40-plus years. He's been at San Diego for 44 years as Mile High Comics, so he's been, at least been doing it that long. And he's got like warehouses like you wouldn't believe, like massive warehouses packed with stuff. Now, for the first time in 44 years, they're pulling out of San Diego Comic-Con, citing costs and low foot traffic. And he's like, you know, the Comic-Con's changed a lot. It's no longer about they're no longer coming for the comics. They're coming for different reasons. And for that, combined with various issues he had with San Diego Comic-Con, you know, committee, he's pulling out. Now, on the face of it, Stu, I want to put that to you. What's your initial reaction? Because I've also got a bit of a second item on the agenda. But do you want to hear that, or do you just want to give your initial reaction to one of the biggest comic book suppliers in the States pulling out of San Diego Comic-Con? What do you think that it means?
Well, I mean, I think the popularity right now of comic books is going up.
Yeah.
Ever since these kind of major studio movies came out.
Yeah.
The popularity has been going through the roof.
You would think so.
So the fact that this supplier is kind of really struggling to make money at this con.
Yeah.
To me, without having ever seen this guy,
he's old. Massively old.
Yeah, but I've never seen his store. I've never seen what he does at these cons.
Mm.
But it feels like something's not right.
Well,
if you're losing money at a con like this,
and you're
not doing something right.
I'll tell you what he doesn't do, Stu, and I picked this up from his videos. He doesn't compete on price. And I got this from a couple of my mates who actually do go to San Diego Comic Con in connection with Batman Universe. And, like, they go there, you know, yearly, and they do interviews with people. And they said they've been on the con floor many times. He doesn't compete on price, so he can be there. He prices everything at, like, cover price, pretty much, with maybe a very small discount. And across the row from him, someone else has got the same book at half price.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, I'm not selling. Now, this to me points to, like, clearly, and I've seen this in his videos, he's like, I'm all about the collection. I've got the biggest collection. Like, you can walk into his store, dude, and honestly, it's like heaven for a comic book reader. You know what I mean? He's got everything. You know what I mean? But he doesn't compromise on price. Everything's higher priced. You know, and it's weird. And he said that in his videos. And I'm kind of like, well, dude, if I'm going to buy Amazing Spider-Man, you know, Volume 1 JMS, if I buy it from you for like $25 US, but and you've got the biggest store in the world, and it's $25 US, and fucking Mr. Rinky Dink down the road has it for like $15, the fact he's got a smaller shit of store, it's still the same book, and I'm saving $10.
Yeah.
Like, you know, these guys, like, sometimes they talk as if you would think the fucking strippers working their stores and, like, providing, like, you know, fucking hand jobs to clients coming in, that it's so incredible the service you're going to get. But it's like, dude, I'm just rolling into the store and buying a book and walking out. I don't need a fucking guy in my ear telling me the history of Spider-Man. I know what I want to get, or I want to have a look and buy something. You know, they go, oh, but our customer service is so fantastic. We do so much. Yeah, do you? Really?
I mean, look, that might work with a brick-and-mortar store in a town suburb.
Sure.
But when you're looking at a con...
Yeah, the con, yeah.
When you've got your competitors literally 100 metres away
and,
from you...
And that is what people have reported to me. That is the scenario.
There's no point having that kind of attitude when your competitors are so close. Yeah. People are able to just walk up to 100 meters.
Got this for $12. You're selling it for $26. It's the same thing. It's a new book. What's the problem? Oh, but we're the premier store in the world. Yeah, you're also a fucking ripoff joint.
Exactly. At a con, you want quick. You don't want good service at a con.
Yeah.
You want a quick sale.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, yeah. Thank you, Stu. We agree on something here. It's the second thing we've agreed on today. Actually, poor old Ray, one of our biggest supporters, and I've got something to read out for him. He was actually worried. He's like, are you and Stu okay after last episode? I was like, yes. What's wrong with Stu? I was like, yeah, we're fine. I said, we leave it all on the court. I mean, you know, God. If you're going to go to war over fucking Punisher comics, and I could understand. I mean, I'm old, so I can't really be bothered. But if I was young and feisty, yeah, maybe.
Like, you know, if it was like morning and my hip wasn't hurting.
Yeah, my hip wasn't hurting, yeah, exactly. But that's not the scenario I'm facing. So anyway, we agree on that. Turning to our next news item, Stu, it's to do with Marvel Legacy. And we've mentioned before the sort of piecemeal style fucking news announcements that have come out. A lot of homage. Is that how you say it?
Homage
covers and renumber titles, but not much else than that. Like these covers coming out, like, oh, check this cover out. It's like a homage to something that happened 20 years ago, and we're going to renumber titles, but no creative teams mentioned or attached. And apparently creators, and this is a rumor I saw online, creators themselves are being kept completely in the dark. And at Marvel are being kept in the dark if they're still staying on their title or if they're going to be put on a new one or whatever's happening.
I think this is the spoiler culture just gone a little bit mad.
Yeah.
It's the same as a lot of actors now in these Marvel movies don't get scripts until the last moment.
Really?
And when they do, they're on their own iPads, which are finger-locked to them. And automatically lock after 15 minutes or something like that. Like, the spoiler culture is just rampant. They're now shutting down any chance of spoilers happening.
But seriously, if I'm a creator over at Marvel and I want to know what books I'm working on because I've got to develop stories and I've got to, you know, art teams, etc. Like, I'll say this again. When DC announced Rebirth, they had solid creative titles on the books that were coming out when they released it. How hard is it to put together these teams? Because apparently what's happening is other publishers are fishing for these Marvel creators who are sort of like hanging in the wind a little bit, you know. And some more rumors came out. We heard the rumor, and I'm not normally a rumor mill guy, but I am sort of attracted to these kind of more solid sort of stories. Jason Aaron apparently is going to be on Avengers with, I think, Esad Ribic is how you say his name. He's a very good artist. He's the guy who did Secret Wars and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful artist. And Jason Aaron. I mean, I love Jason Aaron, dude. I mean, the guy, him on Avengers, I'm like, sign me up.
Yeah.
So that's a rumor, that team. And apparently, and that would make sense because, like, that's a premier title. They need it because Avengers is a fucking mess at the moment.
Mm.
Like, come on.
Yeah, they need to get a couple of big guys on there and do a really solid run.
Yeah, let's kind of break it down to bricks and mortar and like let's get it going again.
I don't need groundbreaking storytelling. I just need a really solid run.
Yeah.
For a few months, just to
get me back in the swing.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't want to see Kitty Avengers either. Go away, Kitty Avengers.
Oh, fuck off, Amadeus Cho.
Yeah. He's a lot to blame, isn't he?
Could not think of more than
nothing. Poor old Amadeus Cho. I feel sorry for him because he's kind of like a symbol of just how fucking annoying some of those Avengers are. Like, but it's like...
It was like Rick Jones in the early Avengers.
Yeah.
Just the dickhead who used to come along and sing for them. Oh, couldn't be a more useless character.
And
they would find ways to make him useful.
Who would you think's more annoying, Rick Jones from the Avengers or Snapper Carr from Justice League? Who snapped?
Snapper Carr is so annoying. Snapper Carr is far more annoying because they never found a use for him.
Because he's also quite conceited.
He died useless.
Yeah, but he's also quite a conceited soul, Snapper Carr. Like he really thinks that he's doing something. Like he's actually a value. It's like you're doing zero, mate.
The coolest guy in 1942. for a long time.
Yeah, he held onto that spot for a long time.
Way too long.
Yeah, he was a sad fuck of a character. But but anyway, so that's one of the rumors, which I hope is true. The other rumor is that Nick Spence is taking over Spider-Man, which... From Slot.
That I'm not excited for.
Well,
if Nick Spencer can tighten up his storytelling, I'd be all right with it.
Look, hopefully he will. I mean,
I don't know. Tell a decent story.
But he loves a long story,
man,
dude.
He loves a long story.
Yeah. To be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if the actor, sorry, not the actor, he's not an actor, the writer who did the issue of Spider-Man Master Plan that we're doing this week in Weekly Comics, Robbie Thompson, I think his name is. I wouldn't be surprised if he got a Guernsey because he's been doing a title called Spidey for quite some time. I'm not reading it, but I mean, if you read Master Plan, it's not bad. It's okay.
I really enjoyed that comic.
You enjoyed it?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. So I'm saying, wouldn't be surprised if he got a run, you know? Because, I mean, you want a guy who's... He's been proving it in a side title, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He's hungry for a good title and a good run.
Go back to the days of Roger Stern. Roger Stern proved himself in Peter Parker's Spectacular Spider-Man. Did great work. I've got it in the omnibus out there. And then he got a run on the main title, Amazing Spider-Man, and did it for, like, you know, 30, 40 issues, whatever. That's how... I mean, sometimes you got to work your way up through the minors, you know?
Yeah.
And you work in the side Spider-Man title that real Spider-Man hardcore fans are reading, but maybe the majority aren't, then you cross over an Amazing Spider-Man and make a big splash. I saw some guy on Facebook. This is what he said. He goes, oh, no, Slot all the way to 1,000. I'm like, fuck, really? Like, why don't you just write 10,000? Why don't you just let him write it, like, forever? Like, you know, like, on his deathbed, he's dictating to his wife, like, more plots. I mean, honestly, like, Dan Slott, you're a lovely guy. You've done some good work. Go on another title, dude. Come on. Give Spidey a fucking break, man. Like, I think you've told all this. I think you've gone past your ABC level stories. I think you're now in the sort of like, I had half an idea 20 years ago about this. Can we kind of mine this out for like 25 issues? Like, you know what I mean? It's very like Beverly Hills 10th season.
Yeah,
you know, like it's like we
get over it.
Just end it. Just finish it.
Just please let it die.
And don't let Spidey die. All it takes is just a new creative team. That's it. That's all it takes. It's not. Come on, Marvel. And he was on Twitter, and someone said to him, "Are you still writing Spider-Man after Legacy?" And his response was one word: yes. Now, would you be so blunt with a fan if you didn't have that already signed and sealed, Stu?
Yeah, exactly right.
He must know that he... But apparently the rumour is he's only doing a few issues and then handing it over to Nick Spencer.
No, maybe.
Maybe. Who knows? And the other rumour is that Mark Waid and Chris Somni are doing Captain America and then they're handing it over to Ta-Nehisi Coates. I'm cool with that. I think that's a cool idea. And who knows, Stu? I mean, these things might all be just dust in the wind, you know? If anything, I believe the Jason Aaron story more than anything.
I think that's the most plausible out of the three.
Yeah, the other stuff is kind of rinky-dink sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Stu, interesting item here. Now, a new mature superhero imprint at DC headed up by Mark Doyle, who was editor of the Bat books and has had a lot of success. He's been editor of the Bat books, I think, since New 52.
Yep.
And he's done a very good job there. And he's,
absolutely.
Yeah, and he's been moved over the thing. Now, it's not Vertigo. Because I read in the article, apparently they consider Vertigo now a drag on sales, which is interesting. Because it's always been kind of like that sort of adult, you know, orientated sort of section of the audience that Karen Berger and that wrote.
Yeah.
Or edited, sorry. Obviously, so many creators have had great runs of Vertigo over time. Like you had Neil Gaiman, you had Jason Aaron, you've had Grant Morrison. The list goes on and on and on. You've had Azzarello. Like they've had so many good stories. I can't understand why they think people are like... Oh, no more Vertigo. I can't possibly handle any more Vertigo. I want to start a new imprint with a new name.
I don't know. I think this is just a marketing ploy, to be honest with you. I don't think they've actually changed the content at all. I think they're just changing the branding.
Yeah, probably. Good point, Stu. I mean, you've knocked that one away.
The content's fine. There's nothing wrong with the content.
Stu, you reminded me just then. You know what you reminded me of? Then a guy who's just walking up to take a penalty shot in soccer and just put it away. just bang. You put it into the corner of the net. The goalie hasn't even moved. And Stu's just done a quick fist pump and walked away. Just maybe one finger in the air.
Mic drop, walk off.
Yeah, bang. You've solved that story, Stu.
Yeah. Everyone loves the content. There's nothing wrong with the Vertigo content.
There's zero wrong with it. And let's face it, the Vertigo is not what it used to be. It's not churning out like tens of comics a month. It's like, if you look at Vertigo, when I get my King's Comic like list for what's out this week, it's usually like one or two titles. Yeah. So maybe let it die. And let it be the museum piece for the older stuff. And then, because you've already got Young Animal, which is Gerard Way's imprint, which has got like Mother Panic and Doom Patrol, etc., and sort of something associated close to that headed up by this guy who did a really good job with the Bat books.
Yeah.
Like his Bat books have pretty much all been successful.
Absolutely.
So I've got a lot of faith in him. Stu, turning to some movie news, Dark Phoenix rumours that Magneto's going to be in it with a possible link to the Acolytes, which is kind of like his little band of followers, I believe.
Yeah.
And Genosha, the famous city of Genosha, which I know from New X-Men, Grant Morrison comics, is going to be featured as like the homeland, I guess, of the... of at least his X-Men, his Acolytes.
Yeah, which I kind of like.
I dig it, man. Yeah.
They're putting Magneto as like this cult leader kind of status.
It's kind of growing the story beyond where we've been sort of trapped.
Mm.
It's kind of growing it, you know, it's fresh growth.
I like they're finally kind of evolving the characters a little more.
Yeah, me too, man. I mean, I remember back in the 90s or from the TV show, Asteroid M, I think it was called. He built a base on the asteroid and stuff.
Yeah, I remember that.
And she got fucking crazy.
That was great.
I think it crashed in the end. I don't think it's going to end well, you know, like for Magneto. It never seems to end too well for him, does it?
No. I mean, look, having said that, all of this is coming off...
What's it coming out of?
A costume that we've seen.
Is that where it's from?
Yeah.
I didn't research the article, though, heavily. I left that to you, Stu. I'm busy with the news over here and, like, you know, withering attacks from the audience.
So,
from a costume.
Yeah, and the costume is, and I quote, meant to suggest the imagery commonly associated with cult leaders.
What?
And they've taken that
What
and
does
gone,
that even mean? Cult leaders, I would think, normally these days, just look like crazy fucking lunatics, like just in camo. Like, I'm thinking of, like, American cult leaders and stuff. Unless you go, like, sort of Muslim.
Well, no, we're talking, like, KKK-type cult leaders.
Right.
People that wear the robes and kind of...
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Really?
So they've got a new outfit of Magneto that kind of suggests that kind of cult leader status.
Okay. Well...
in his outfit, and that's what they're going off.
Well, okay. Fair enough.
And last time they kind of saw this in the comics, it was in association with the Acolytes.
Okay. I'm open to the story. I think it sounds interesting. Like, it's kind of his version of the X-Men, isn't it? Like, it's his band.
Yeah, I mean, he's always had the Brotherhood.
Brotherhood of Evil, yeah.
This is kind of a new take on the Brotherhood.
Yeah, yeah. They're kind of more, maybe a bit more brainwashed.
Yeah, it was less about creating anarchy and more about his, like, ultimate utopia for mutants kind of concept.
And cool things, like in the T-shirts they used to have, Magneto was right and stuff. Yeah. Like, that kind of imagery is kind of cool. Wouldn't it be cool to see Quentin Quire? I thought that the other day.
That'd be cool. Like, I'd love to
take,
see that.
Take that into that. Take that. What a fresh character. And they must own it. Like, I mean, because it's an X-Men property.
Yeah, you'd think so. I'm not sure what it.
I think any mutants they created are all owned by Fox. I think.
So anyone they create from now on, automatically goes straight to Fox.
I think, dude. I'm not 100%. I think if it's got the word mutant attached and it's coming from Marvel. In general, that's owned by Fox, with a few exceptions that we've sort of discussed previously. I think Quentin Quire is, and listeners, correct me if I'm wrong, because I think he would be a really interesting, like, addition.
Yeah.
Have we had, in this version, have we had Rogue? We haven't, have we? Other than the old Rogue from...
we had Anna Paquin play Rogue in the original.
But we haven't had her in sort of the newer movies. Oh, we had her in Days of Future Past. Anna Paquin came back.
Yeah.
In the extended cut, there's a Rogue...
Yeah, there's a bit of...
section.
Yeah.
Have you watched that? I've never watched that version.
Yeah, it's kind of at the end of the movie.
Isn't it like a special mission from them?
Oh, I've never watched that bit.
Apparently, the Rogue cut that Bryan Singer released, it's Rogue and I think Magneto and whoever else is in the future going on a mission. I always meant to watch it. I've just never sort of found the time or motivation, even though I do actually own a copy. It's been a bit of a battle the last couple of years, Stu, to just find that time. You know what I'm saying? I mean, find that 10 minutes. And it can't be that long.
Can't be that long.
I imagine...
maybe there's a little too much time devoted to Punisher, Dave. No. Take it from your Punisher time, Dave.
I don't think so, Stu.
No, I didn't think so either.
So interesting what happens. It's always fascinating with how far rumors are sometimes from the truth, especially in movies. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like I said, this all comes from a costume. Like, yeah, they've taken a costume and gone, oh, well, this links to this comic book, which is going to, yeah, it just spirals out of control.
If they put an asteroid with the word M on it, I'll start fucking believing it. Stu, Creed 2?
Creed was fantastic. Yeah, I love Creed 2.
Yeah. And Rocky 4 linked, teased by Sly. He had a picture of Ivan Drago, Dolph Lundgren, fighting Creed. Apollo Creed's son. What's the name of the actor who's playing Apollo Creed's son?
Michael B. Jordan.
Excellent actor. Big fantastic fan. Big fan. And I think the tease is that Drago's son could be fighting him. So, be interesting.
See, that I don't like.
Well, Ivan Drago killed Apollo in the ring.
Yeah, I'm just...
Grudge match.
Just make it a whole next generation lower...
Well, it's his dad. Apollo Creed is his dad, so I can imagine he'd be hunting for fucking Russia.
I know, but everyone just comes down like one generation. It's the sons fighting now. It's such an overused trope, isn't it?
I'm feeling it, though, a little bit. Getting Rocky working in the corner, you know? See, that would be an interesting idea.
I loved Creed so much.
I did. It was cool. It was really good.
I don't know if I want to go the route of...
Yeah, I hear you.
Kind of undermining it with cheesy nods to Ivan Drago and Dolph Lundgren and...
Well, Dolph could be there, because you could have a scene with... It's a good excuse to have a scene with Ivan Drago and Rocky, too. With
Dolph and Sly.
So maybe a bit of a street fight.
Oh, man. If you want to sit... Watch the Expendables movies. That's where I get all my Dolph and I get all my
Sly. You could imagine Sly and Dolph having a moment, though, couldn't you? Could be cool.
Oh, if they're going to be in the same movie, they're going to have a moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, Sly in Rocky and Creed fought off cancer, didn't he? So, I mean, he's not in fighting shape anymore.
No. yeah. So, I mean, this has all come from a picture on Sly's Twitter feed.
Yeah, I know. I actually did research that one.
We're stretching it a bit.
Look, Stu, I break the news. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was a Sun News week, and then I got involved, and I really started researching the internet. Now, turning to our next item, Stu, the Tolkien estate and Warner Brothers settled a long-standing legal battle. It was interesting. Over slot machines in the States, which the estate claimed Warner's were not licensed to profit from. It's actually been a long-running legal saga worth hundreds of millions of dollars. Because, remember, Tolkien sold the movie rights, Stu, for something like £50 or £150 back in the 70s. A fucking stupid decision. Like, what a fucking stupid decision. Sorry, J.R.R. Tolkien. Like, but, I mean, I've just always have felt that that's one of the most stupid decisions of all time. But, anyway, it was settled out of court because it was almost going to go to the Supreme Court. You know?
Wow.
Well, did these slot machines, can you imagine how much money they're raking in off them?
Yeah, I know. And then this stuff's all about money, isn't it?
Yeah, it comes down to money.
It comes down to the bottom line.
Yeah. And the estate, though, in fairness, I mean, far be it for me to stand up for Warner Brothers. The estate, though, has always been hugely anti the movies. The Tolkien estate, the son, Christopher Tolkien, has always gone out of his way to say how much he hates the movies, which I've always felt is a weird move.
The first trilogy, The Lord of the Rings?
Yeah, he hates it. With a passion.
They were fantastic
movies. That's what I thought too, yeah. Look.
So well done.
Were the whole movies bloated? Yeah, I thought they were great. Like, really? And
They were probably a little long.
Maybe.
But that's it.
But, dude, I love Lord of the Rings probably more than any other book when I was, you know, in that age range, like 18 to 20. Or even younger, 15 to 20.
Oh, look, they're by far the best fantasy books.
They're great.
There.
They're great. And then
nothing competes with Tolkien.
They're the foundation for so much. They're so fucking good.
Exactly.
And the movies, I thought, really fucking delivered.
Yeah.
Were the Hobbit movies a huge, like,
waste of time? The Hobbits weren't good.
No. They could have done that in one movie.
Exactly. You could ignore the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Did you like bits and pieces of it? I like bits and pieces of it rather than the whole thing. I thought the whole thing was overblown and long.
There were scenes that I enjoyed.
That's what I'm saying. There were bits and pieces I enjoyed, but there was a lot that I was like, man, this is boring.
Yeah, generally speaking, no.
Or just like, well, we're just killing time. Like, it was almost like, you know, playing for time a little bit. Like,
yeah.
As if you're batting and, like, yeah, just kind of see it out till lunch. Like, I don't know. It was the Tolkien estate, Christopher Tolkien, has always taken a really, really anti-view. Maybe it's because I sold for £150. But you can't tell me they didn't sell a lot of fucking books off them as well. And it's not like... I mean, I wonder if they got a cut from the merchandising. Maybe they didn't even get a cut from the merchandising. That would sour your view of the estate. If you're not getting anything from the merchandising of the Tolkien stuff.
Quite possibly.
Be interesting. if we could reach out to Christopher Tolkien, probably aged about 95 now, get him on the show and grill him over this deal. Be interesting. We could get some interesting responses.
Just pick on a senior, yeah.
Well, not pick on him. It's Lois Lane, dude. I've got to ask the questions.
Yeah.
He just hangs up on me in like the first minute.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No, I start with like, I lead him with like, don't you really hate the movies, man? Like, didn't they really disrespect your father's work? Yeah, and get him, yes, I agree. And then, you know, like, then you start asking the hard hitting questions. Anyway, Stu, you've been over there, you know, very high and mighty so far this show. I know you feel you're ahead on points. I can see from the way you're grinning, you look like a fighter who's up on points. You know what I mean? So the look you've got on your face, Stu. Now, Stu, Alex.
Dave, some of these you're just walking into, though.
Stu, I'm not even going to reveal my hand here. Audience members, I'm going to pitch Stu an item that brought up in the news, and I want to see his response without any influence from me whatsoever. He has no idea where I'm going to be on this next topic. Alex DeCampi, now she's a very good writer. She did like Archie versus Predator. She did, I think it's called No Mercy at Image, et cetera, et cetera. So she's quite an established writer. She had a thing on her Twitter. She had worked with an unnamed publisher. I have no idea who the publisher is. And she said that she was invited to a writer's retreat, like, you know, like the Marvel retreat. Not saying it's Marvel, I doubt it is, but like a writer's retreat to workshop, you know, some ideas for stories. Now, she's a single mum. She's also a freelancer. She just gets paid for the particular work. And according to her, the publisher would not pay for her child because she didn't have anyone to care for the kid, like any close family and obviously no partner, would not pay for her child to come to the writer's retreat.
Okay.
So, and she was kind of kicking up about it on Twitter, and they did offer to do like a teleconference and then said if, you know, she wasn't, you know, going to attend that, then she was going to be off the book, basically, whatever she was attached to.
Right.
So, Stu, turn over to you, your views.
So in her contract that she signed for this...
Give information at all? I don't know about the inner details of her contract. She was scheduled to go to writer's retreat, but then she was like, I can't go... No, sorry, I need to bring the kid. Because I don't have anyone for the baby, okay? Or the young child, or however old they are. I don't know how old the kid is, but young. The kid's obviously young. And they've sort of said it's not a creche. It's not a childcare centre. You can't bring the kid. Or, actually, we're not paying for the kid. We're not paying for your child. You'll have to fork out for that yourself. And she was like, you know, she's a writer, dude. She's not worth millions of dollars. Like, you know, she's like, I don't have the cash to just splash out for this to be for a working gig. And so she was sort of like caught in a tricky position, you know. I feel sorry for her, man, to be honest.
Yeah, but I think this appearance is probably just part of her job.
Yeah.
If you're contracted to this as part of your career, as part of your job,
yeah,
you've got to live up to that contract.
It's like the girl next, like, if I could break it down. And I hate to break, I do feel sorry for her. She's a single mother. Like, the woman next, who opposite me, who I work with at work. Like, she couldn't just, if she wanted to, couldn't just bring a kid into work.
No, and it's the same as, like, if you had a small child, but then you had to go away for a conference for 2 days.
Yeah, that's what's happened.
Work's not paying for the flights for the kid.
No.
That's part of the job.
Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Like, obviously, I feel for her. This isn't a great scenario for anyone.
And I've read a few stories from her where I get the impression, like, the times are pretty tough. You know, it's not easy. Like, this brings some sort of clarity to... It's not easy being a freelancer in the first place. And it's not easy being a female in that industry and a single mother in that industry. Like, a lot of crosses against her. I really, you know, I would go on record. I wish she had a friend or something that could take the kid for a couple of days. You know?
I mean, look, she probably does have a couple of friends that were able to. I think this is...
Yeah, I'm surprised. It's,
I kind of cynically feel like this story may have been released to garner some sympathy, to kind of force their hand and make them...
Yeah. Well, she's got a very, like... For what I've gathered from her, and I've heard her in a few interviews, she's a bit of a shoot-from-the-hip kind of gal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, which is tricky in an industry like this. I just feel for her. I always have... I'll be honest, in my job in commercial collections, my only weak spot, Stu, is single mothers. I must admit, it's one of those things I never feel good about. I think people should never take advantage of single mothers. It's one of my, you know, one of my few ethics in the world, Stu. One of my few morals I go by, my friend. Steer me well so far. Anyway, yeah, so I guess we can follow that story if we really want to, but I sort of don't. I feel a bit voyeuristic even knowing that information, you know what I mean? I do. I wish I almost didn't know it, but I do know. And I was going to try. I wanted to try to trap you and see if you could make something which I could kind of grill you for on the internet. But you answered the question quite well.
Sorry, Dave.
Did you like how I did? I was trying to give you as little information as possible.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
I was hoping you'd come up with something really inflammatory. You know,
just spewing hate.
Yeah. Really fall into my traps. Nice. Yeah.
You've got to warn me next time. I'll fall into some traps for you. I wouldn't want you to look bad on the internet.
That's you. Some more information about Legacy. This is actually quite cool. Joey Duggan, who I was worried about this. Joey Duggan's continuing on post-Secret Empire, yeah. And he's doing Despicable Deadpool. And apparently it's kind of like Deadpool's going after Cable. Because in recent issues of Deadpool, I don't know if you've been keeping up, he sort of made a deal with the devil with Strife. You know, who's, I don't know what he's like. He's Cable's clone or something like that. Like, he's the evil version of Cable. And yeah, he's actually going after Cable to kill him as part of the deal that he made.
That's cool.
And it's kind of cool. Like, because, I mean, most of the time, Joey Duggan, although he has taken Deadpool in some dark places, is a pretty sympathetic treatment of Deadpool. Whereas this is going back to the original Deadpool stories, when you read them, he's much more of an anti-hero, like, assassin with sort of a real taste for blood.
Yeah.
So I think it's just an interesting tonal shift. I mean, Joey Duggan has proven himself very, very flexible when it comes to writing Deadpool. He's shown a lot of nuance. It hasn't all been comedy. There's been some dark issues and twists as well. And he's also shown a surprising amount of heart at times as well. Now, Stu, turning away from Deadpool news, we've sort of already covered Marvel Legacy, so I'll turn to something, an interesting item, just before, so we're getting towards the end of our news items here. Ray messaged me on Facebook. Ray from Fist of Khonshu?
Yeah.
The leader of Fist of Khonshu, a big fan of the show and a great supporter, and we thank you, Ray. Now, he messaged me asking, what do we think of fans exclusively going for Marvel or DC? Do we agree? What are the pitfalls? What is the advantage? And Ray says he thinks some fans diss one, publisher, only to further the validity of the other. Stu, your thoughts.
So I grew up Marvel only.
Gotcha.
But for me, it was never that I disliked...
Punisher all the way?
Punisher sometimes.
Really? I doubt that.
I've got some Punisher volumes at home.
Mm-hmm. Sure, but you're Marvel. You're a Marvel boy. Marvel zombie.
Yeah, exactly. I've got 90% of my collection at home is Marvel.
Cool.
But it was never a case of me not liking DC.
Sure.
It was just that Marvel was what I gravitated to more.
Yep. And once you got a taste for it, I guess you're hooked into it more because the stories
pay off in other titles. Yeah, I continue to read the next story and the next story and what's the backstory of this character.
And for you, what was the original one? You may have said this before, but what was the original? Was it like Avengers or was it Deadpool or... I know I tried to indoctrinate you with Deadpool. Tried to poison you there.
You did. The first few comics I actually read were Deadpool.
Oh, okay, cool.
But the first comic that I bought, I think it was Dark Phoenix.
Oh, cool. Well, that's a fucking cool place to start.
I bought that trade.
That's about as good as anything you're going to get, especially in that period, you know?
Yeah, and I think I followed that up with some Spider-Man as well, so...
So you had a Marvel base?
Oh, absolutely.
But not really a DC bias, just a Marvel preference, and that was feeding into what you were reading.
Like I said, it was nothing to do with anti-DC in any way. No. It was just pro-Marvel.
Yeah. I don't really... Yeah. What do you think of this?
I think
like,
since...
You know?
I've since started buying DC.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually buying a lot more DC than Marvel at the moment.
Sure.
I think mostly just because I've read a lot of the Marvel runs that I really want to read.
Yeah, yeah, yes, yeah.
And what I've found is the DC stories are often just as good or better.
Oh, definitely.
But I actually prefer the artwork that Marvel's been doing over the years.
Oh, the art?
Yeah, I'm not as big a fan of the DC artwork as I am of the Marvel artwork.
All right, that's interesting.
And pretty much every generation as well. Throughout the 60s...
Yeah.
I'm Marvel. Throughout the 80s and 90s, when they went the dark, grungy kind of artwork, I'm still all Marvel. Like,
yeah. Well, it was a more extreme X-Men sort of styles and stuff. I'm not a big 90s guy, actually, when it comes to comics. It's probably one of my least big areas, especially in Marvel. Because Batman, I'm a big Batman 90s guy. But it's interesting.
So, I mean, people seem to hate one side or the other.
I've never fathomed that.
One,
It's not a war, guys.
These companies don't get along, but that doesn't mean that you can't read both sides.
They're competitors, but, I mean, fuck. Like, get over it. Like, they're competitors, but, like, you're not actually profiting.
No, and...
you haven't got shares, unless you are a big shareholder of Marvel DC. I don't really see the reason to... You're not going to war. You don't need to stamp yourself with the insignia of one and never read the other. I've always thought that.
No, but, I mean, some people view it like football teams, where they're diehard supporters of one, and because they like one, they can't like any others.
But do you think... I mean, because my position is simple. Because, as usual, I find it very hard to make a decision. But, like, from my childhood, and I'm talking, like, young, it was Spider-Man and Batman. And they were both just absolute icons to me.
Well, I mean, growing up, for me, it wasn't the comics, but we got the Batman animated show and the...
Awesome.
Batman 89.
Yeah.
Batman was around since I was a little kid.
Yeah, and who doesn't love Batman?
Exactly. You know? Batman was huge. And I think Superman is always around as well.
Exactly. He is.
Those two, more than anyone else at DC, I was exposed to as a kid.
Yeah.
But it wasn't through comic books.
No.
When I started reading comics, it was Marvel Comics.
Yeah, that's what you got into.
Yeah.
I remember...
But I feel like it's almost a coin toss.
No, yeah, I agree.
When you walk into a comic book store and the first thing you buy, you're kind of always going to be slightly biased towards whatever your first... experience.
I agree. I mean, apart from Batman, like, if I have to break down into my soul, apart from Batman, which is huge for me, you know how huge Batman is for me.
Yeah.
I think that the majority is Marvel in my head. I own a lot of DC, but the majority, I'm talking like, there's just something about those characters that get me. But then again, you know what? As I've gotten older, the distinction means less and less. I don't really care. Like, I grew to love Wonder Woman with a passion, you know what I mean, and Justice League with a big passion. But I do still think at the end of the day, I tend to track towards more Marvel overall. But right now, I'm probably reading more DC, because I think DC...
Right now, DC is better than Marvel.
DC are doing a better job. Like,
week to week right now, I would prefer to read DC than Marvel. I would say to
listeners, like, honestly, with no real stake in this, like, I've got no fucking shares owned in either company, you know what I mean? I think it behooves you to check out not just the big two. I think there's stuff to be gained, like by going to Image Comics as well. There's much more.
And Dark Horse and some of these smaller companies.
Exactly, yeah.
They're producing some great content.
And a lot of the great creators, frankly, have worked for both sides of the field.
Yeah.
Like, you've got Stan Lee, who's done pretty much all Marvel, but nearly everyone else, like your Brubakers, your Ruckers, fucking whoever, they've worked both sides of the company chain. They're both two big corporate giants, you know?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of Ray's question here, pitfalls of picking one over the other.
Well, I think they're obvious. You miss out. Downsides
is that, you miss out on some of the great stories.
I mean, if you read all Marvel, like, I'll break this down. If you were just, like, the biggest Marvel fan in the world, you've never read Batman. You've never read Justice League. You've missed out. You've never read Sandman.
Exactly.
And equally, if you're...
And vice versa is also true. If you've never read Marvel, you've never read Spider-Man. You've never read Avengers.
If you've never read Marvel and you're a comic fan, I'm almost weeping for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I actually feel upset for you.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, like, and let's not forget that it changes over the decades. Like, if you hate DC for whatever fucking reason in the 60s, there's a completely different DC in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. Like, it changes over time.
Oh, exactly. Both companies have ups and downs.
Ups and downs. And these creators go back and forth, and you can see them. Like, I think of guys like, okay, Bendis is mostly Marvel. He's a good example of someone who stayed at Marvel and been locked into long-term contracts and obviously done very well for himself.
Yeah, very well.
But guys like Brubaker and Rucker and that, they've worked both sides of the industry and then gone and done their own stuff. That's quite a common tale.
Yeah, most creators have.
Yeah, most have. And I think what's more common these days is you get guys who come in and prove themselves at a publisher, at a big publisher, like Warren Ellis did this, and Matt Fraction did this. They build their name up, and then they go and work on their own stuff more, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And build their own brand up after they've already had a bit of visibility from working on, like, an Iron Man or you know, whatever, or an X-Men or exactly, whatever.
I mean, having said that, I think there is an advantage to picking one side of the fence.
Yeah.
And it's that you can go deep into the lore.
Yeah.
You can become an expert on one side, but it takes decades to become an expert on both sides.
Oh, true. Well, yeah.
It's almost impossible to be an expert on both sides of comics.
Oh, totally. You can, exactly. I mean, I actually think even inside the companies, like DC, I'm pretty good at Batman, especially Batman from, like, about 89 on. You know?
Yep.
It's a strength. Strength. And Marvel, I reckon I've got a lot of strengths. But I've got huge black holes. If you tell me what Superman was doing in like fucking the 70s, 80s or whatever, apart from a brief period in the 90s where I read it, I'm clueless.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I've got absolutely no, I couldn't tell you. When you said that character, whatever it was before Stu, Alan Davis or whatever it was you said, Aaron Davis? I was looking at you like, what's Stu talking about? You know what I mean? Like Guardians history. Like,
yeah, and I think that's the difference. So characters like that I know about because I've read a lot of Marvel.
Yeah, cool.
But I haven't read a lot of DC.
Yeah, but you'll get this, Stu. And we gradually bring... one of the things we do in this show is we're going to bring in various bits and pieces from all over. It's going to be part of the fun.
Oh, look, I've definitely... As well as reading some Marvel here that I've never read before...
Sure.
I'm reading a lot of Punisher now that, that I haven't read before.
Opening your eyes,
can't say I'm going to continue to read Punisher when I don't have to. But
I don't know how that happened, man. Just one of those quirks of fate.
Just some kind of lucky just fluke, I guess.
Okay, now, Stu, finally, before we sort of move on to weekly comics, there's some good sales on Comixology that I want to mention. There's a great one on Young Animal titles that also includes the Grant Morrison Doom Patrol, the older stuff, and Peter Milligan and Shade the Changing Man. And I just think there's some really good sales there that people can pick up. I actually went and picked up all the Doom Patrol, and I also picked up Shade the Changing Man because I've always wanted to read that kind of stuff because I'm a huge Grant Morrison fan, but I've never read his Doom Patrol.
Yeah, I mean, look, guys, keep up with things like Comixology and Kindle and Amazon.
Definitely, definitely.
I mean, you can pick up some really great deals.
For low prices.
For really, really good prices.
And right now, as befitting Spider-Man Homecoming, there's some great Spider-Man sales on Comixology as well.
Yeah, there are. I got that email this morning. There's some great Spider-Man content out there.
Finally, Marvel Unlimited, which I'm a big supporter of. I actually read some of my Spider-Man comics this week on Marvel Unlimited. They've got a sort of one-month free offer as well.
Nice.
And honestly, I swear by Marvel Unlimited. Every year, it's like $40. It's such a handy... I'm sitting in bed sometimes, and I'm like, I haven't bought it on Comixology, and I'm just like, you know what, I'm going to go to Marvel Unlimited. It's got literally almost the entire library.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy how much stuff it's got. Yes, it could be a better app, but they've improved a lot as well. They really need to... I really should email someone. They really need to change it from 12 to more. They should make it like 24. Well, like in a Comixology studio, you can download... everything and have it on, you know, I've got like a lot of comics on Comixology, like a few thousand, and I can download whatever I want to read offline. Why have I got this restriction of 12 with Marvel Unlimited? I always find it, I don't understand why.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's obviously a privacy type piracy problem, but
make it 24, you know, help my life out.
Make it enough that you can go away for a weekend.
Yeah.
And have enough to read.
And ignore my girlfriend and just read that.
That's what we go away
and
for.
Get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Have Michelle shouting at me while I'm reading comics on my iPad. I'm just going, yeah, in a second.
Dave wants to go away for a romantic weekend with him and his iPad.
Pretending it's something important that I'm doing. Pretending that, like, I'm actually doing something that I couldn't just do it.
Yeah, I'll be with you in a moment. Yeah, just got to sign this document. And...
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, Stu, do you know what time it is?
It's time for weekly comics.
Stu, there you go. I led you in, man, and you just, you know, you didn't give it. I gave you the opportunity. I gave you the microphone, Stu, and you didn't do the theme song, and I don't understand why you did that. It wasn't a highlight of our performance.
Dave's looking so pleased with himself right now.
I feel like I come back from...
Oh, Dave's looking good.
Early on, I was down on points, Stu. You landed a couple of early blows.
It feels like,
know?
He's right back on top right now. You can just see it.
That's a dangerous place for me to be, too. I'm a good front runner. Oh. Now, Stu.
Wow.
The first comic. Stu, the first comic that we're doing this week, Stu. Batman 26.
Yeah, so we're still in the middle of the Joker, Riddler...
War of the Jokes and Riddles.
I'm enjoying this.
Yeah, it was a good issue. It was much better than the first issue, I thought. Riddle is a crazy bastard, isn't he? I didn't realize how crazy Riddle was.
Yeah, this was, I think, the strongest of the three so far.
Oh, it's funny. Is it the three? I thought it was the second part. It's definitely the strongest issue so far in this story.
The third, I think.
Okay. Well, look, I really enjoyed it much more than the previous two. I liked the guest appearance of Poison Ivy. That was kind of, came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That came out of left field. And the Joker was starting to smile again, and he was looking like a crazy bastard.
I know, the artwork was phenomenal.
Really, yeah, it was really good.
When you had that panel of just his face.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, all his moods are coming back and forth, and he's...
Yeah.
He's just, like, completely in this moment.
And the whole thing is being told in the now as a flashback with Bruce telling Selena in bed, basically.
Yeah.
The story of Star Wars. And it's a year in. He's been Batman for a year. It's an interesting story, isn't it?
I'm enjoying it.
And I like at the end when Batman's talking about all the things they started calling him, like the Dark Knight Detective and...
Yeah.
You know, and he's working for the Justice League and all that. Like, it's just it's a very moody story. It's heavy on the moods.
It is, but I don't mind that with these characters.
Compliment, it works. Actually. Yeah. Tom King's an interesting writer. It's not my favourite kind of style of doing Batman, but it's a bit novel. I like it. He's got a bit of originality, actually. He's breathing a bit of difference into the sort of character.
Yeah, but I think you kind of have to do that with someone like Batman.
Oh, definitely. And it's hard to do. Yeah, it's hard to do.
It's hard to come into a title that's so well written for decades.
Yeah. And if you're not going to do...
And be remembered.
Yeah. If you're not going to do a more action-orientated Batman, I think it's particularly hard. I think that's one route that some writers can go and have done very well.
You know? I think that's a safer route to go.
Yeah, and I think that you can do that really, really well. But he does a more moody, kind of very introspective Batman.
Yeah, he does. But that really fits with the Riddler.
Yeah. And Riddler is nuts.
Yeah.
I don't actually understand what the quarrel is. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Why is Riddler... He's kind of baiting him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it'll come out.
Hopefully.
In the next couple of issues.
My questions will be
answered. Everything will be answered.
And do you think... And I'm going to ask you another question, because obviously... old Bats has had a romantic night with Selena, and he proposed to us, Stu. Were you thinking it's going to be a yes? Are we going to get a marriage? Is it going to be a marriage in 2017? Is it going to be a wedding ring on a finger?
I can't see it happening.
God, you're just not a romantic, are you? I just can you imagine the wedding? Would they be in costume? I don't know. Will Ace the Bat Hound turn up?
Oh, that would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
But wouldn't it be good to see all the Robins in costume, including the... Oh, he's not dead anymore, so he can come in Red Hood. And then you could have, like, the bridal party have some rogues in it as well, like of her. She could have, like... Well, she could have Harley... Because at times Harley and Ivy have been close friends of Catwoman.
Yeah, they have.
So they could be, like, her bridesmaids.
Look, it could happen.
It could be so fucking cool. I'm pitching this down. Jimmy Palmiotti, write this story. Like, this would be great. The wedding of Batman and Catwoman in costume in the Batcave, officiated by Superman.
This is getting worse very quickly.
In costume as
in
well.
In costume, I'm on board with, but in the Batcave.
Not filling the Batcave?
No, not filling the Batcave.
Or somewhere then. Somewhere nice.
What's the point of inviting a crowd of people to your secret lair?
Oh, that's a good point, Stu. I didn't think of that. Well, they could be let in with blindfolds.
Underneath Wayne Manor.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of... I don't know. Yeah.
Maybe I'm taking it too far, but you get my general pitch.
I like the general pitch.
Because you're going to have Wonder Woman there. Yeah, it'd sort of be like the way I'm picturing it, like Funeral for a Friend was, with all everyone turned up, but this is for a happy event, which is the wedding issue. This is something that I didn't realise I wanted so much until I started talking about it. Now I really want it. And I'll be kind of disappointed if they're not in costume. Like, I mean, Selena's beautiful. I love Selena Kyle. But I want to see her in costume, and I want to see everyone else in costume. I want it to be a festive occasion, you know? So, well, I think they're going to get married. I think he's evolving the storyline a bit. I think he's sort of, he seems to be growing the characters out of where they've sort of been for a long time, you know?
Yeah, and I think that will, I mean, them getting married would definitely do that, but.
It's going to be a baby on the way.
Now we're pushing it.
Little bun in the oven.
Oh.
For the kitty cat.
What is it, Bat Cat? What's it going to be called?
Bat Cat. That'd be such a good name.
Bat Cat.
Well, he's already got one kid. He's got Damien.
True, but it wasn't the cat one.
Talia al Ghul.
Yeah.
He really picks him, doesn't he? Talia. Mind you, that was more of a liaison. That wasn't a relationship.
And that always felt to me more like Talia was getting one over on him.
She was fucking hunting for Bat. Like, she was hungry.
Like, he didn't really have much say in that.
Well, I think in the original, he fucked her, and that was it. Like, in the original, they had a very romantic, like, one-night stand.
Yeah.
But then in the sort of Grant Morrison thing, I think it's more like she drugged him and took his, like, I don't know. Like, you know.
Who knows? This is getting dark really quickly.
She did. I think she did. She did some weird sort of stuff on him to actually get, like, the stuff to create a baby. Like, she, it wasn't just her having a one-night stand.
Right.
It was a little bit more devious than that, is what I'm trying to say.
That sounds really dark and weird.
It was dark and weird. That's what I'm saying. If you read the Grant Morrison, it was. And that was his reaction too. Like, she actually drugged him. Like, with, I think, a sleeping drug. So, yeah, that's Talia, man. She's playing for keeps. So, Stu, I'm going to give this issue, I think it's a solid 9 out of 10 issue, man.
I've got it down as an 8. So, fair enough. Yeah, we both agree.
It's just a really good issue. And it's definitely my favourite in the series so far.
Yeah, same. And it's a good series. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's good. Stu, we mentioned it briefly. Spider-Man, The Master Plan 1, written by Robbie Thompson. Pretty much just a day in the life of Spidey.
I super enjoyed this issue.
Yeah,
it's a really great, fun, quick-paced Spider-Man.
Yeah, definitely. And I think this is an audition for the main title. To me, this is like, if I'm Marvel, I would
give him the main title.
If I'm Axel Alonso, I go, mate, you've got the main title.
Yeah.
Like, go and run with it.
This
you know?
Is fantastic. This is everything you want from Spider-Man.
Yep.
It had the humor. It got Spider-Man. It really got him.
This is the first time. This is like when I read the early Roger Stern and Spectacular Spider-Man. You saw a guy who just got the character and he worked on it and he did like 20 issues sort of outside of the main public consciousness, which is exactly what this guy's been doing on Spidey, and I think he's ready to go on the main title. I'm endorsing him. Robbie Thompson for Amazing
I'd
Spidey.
I'd love to see him. This Master Plan number one was so good. It was just so neat.
Did you read the back issue as well with the Vulture?
The first issue of the Vulture.
That was cool.
Yeah. So obviously it's designed to come out with Homecoming and the kind of Vulture story.
How funny is the old Vulture? He's such an old, crabby bastard. Like,
that was fantastic. I've got a copy of that in trade already. That
cool, yeah.
The original first Vulture appearance.
No, it was good to see him. And I mean, I have to give this a solid 8.5 out of 10. I thought
this
it was.
I'm giving 9 out of 10.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. It's well deserving of it too. And I put that in there. I didn't even know what it was. I just saw Spider-Man Master Plan 1. I'll just go with it. I'll just go with the flow. And I'm so glad I included it. Now, Stu, here's one I read on the train today. Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe Again, issue 1. I thought this was awesome.
This one I was a little more on the fence about.
Yeah. It's an interesting story. Pretty much, to give the basic pitch, it starts out with some incredibly good art. Deadpool, with various members of the X-Men, are fighting MODOK.
So he's fighting MODOK with Rogues there. Who else is there in the beginning?
Is Cable there?
Yeah, Cable's there.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Cable's there later.
Cable's in that detective.
There's thing. Various members of the X-Men, like minor members and stuff. Like, it's a bit of a motley crew. But regardless, they're having a fight, and then something bizarre happens. I didn't quite understand what happened. Like, MODOK said something. And that
MODOK says
Deadpool.
Some trigger words to Deadpool, which was the first verse in a poem, I think it was.
Okay. And basically, all of a sudden, Deadpool started. He thought he was killing bad guys.
Deadpool just went into his pool vision.
Yeah.
Where everything became comic booky. And,
yeah, yeah. Almost a weird childlike.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And he just started killing what he thought were bad guys.
But unfortunately, they were the good guys. And he killed all of them, I think.
And then this group of kind of the detectives roll up.
Cable, Punisher, Moon Knight.
Cable, Punisher, Moon Knight.
Jessica Jones.
Jessica Jones is in there. And they're kind of talking about how somebody has killed Gambit, which is the crime scene they're at originally.
Yeah.
And then Luke Cage is dead, which is why Jessica's there.
How would Deadpool have killed Luke Cage with his unbreakable skin? I guess it's just a suspension of disbelief.
Who knows? I mean, would Deadpool put a grenade in his mouth? I don't know.
Okay, I suppose. Okay, well, point answers. Shoot, well done. He was just hacking away with his swords. I was just like, but I guess at the end of the day, Deadpool can last forever. Luke Cage can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you could potentially wound him in some way.
Yeah, or even if it was like drowning or.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like throwing him off a cliff kind of thing, you know.
Well, throwing a cliff wouldn't kill him. He's got unbreakable skin, dude.
Well, yeah, but all his bones would shatter.
Do they?
He breaks on the inside.
Does he?
Yeah.
I thought that was the whole point, that he doesn't. Like, doesn't even get through.
He's got, like, super strength, but there's still a limit to that.
Okay. Yeah, there is a limit. True. Because I enjoyed it. I did find it a bit confusing, but I still dug it, man. Like, Where were you?
Well, I mean, towards the end when he goes in that second killing spree, it's because he gets a phone call and they say that same poem verse to him. And all of a sudden, Pooler Vision kicks in and he just flips out and goes killing again. Look, it's a kind of a fun issue. I'm just having read Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
The original run.
Yes.
This doesn't stack up to that.
Well, that was Cullen Bond as well. The same writer. He did a few of them, though, didn't he? Like, does Deadpool Kill the Marvel Universe, is that the one where he then turns to the reader at the end, then enters into the writer's world and stuff and kills them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I like that one.
Yeah. See, that I really enjoyed. This felt like the really poor cousin.
Yeah. It looked... One thing I thought was cool was the art. I thought the art was really good. It was like darker version of Deadpool than I'm used to.
Yeah, which I didn't mind, but... For me, the artwork, it's the same artwork that they used on that Venom run a while back. So it just kept reminding me of Venom.
Okay.
When you saw a darker Deadpool.
Yeah.
It just felt very Venom-like.
Fair enough. And we're not a big fan of Venom in what we've done. We liked Edge of Venomverse, but the actual Venom was not
great.
I didn't mind that
run of Venom, but it wasn't a high point.
No.
This thing just, every time I read a new few pages, while it was a fun read, it kept reminding me of things that were better before it. So I think this just stacks up kind of mediocre compared to what I've read before. And Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe, the original run.
It's good.
That little five issues, the original run?
Four or five, yeah.
That was a really great, fun comic.
Yeah. No, I agree. I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. But
I'm at 6.
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from. I'll tell you one thing. Jerry Duggan knocks out of the park with Deadpool, man. Like, he does a Deadpool that I don't think anyone since Joe Kelly's done as well. Like, frankly, you know?
Yeah, the writing on Deadpool was great.
Yeah.
That I was, very happy with.
Yeah. So, look, Stu, I mean, that actually covers... We only had three trades this week because I picked what was an enormous read for Trade of the Week. JMS's Amazing Spider-Man Ultimate Collection Volume 1. So pretty much JMS, who was the co-creator of Babylon 5, the TV show, and has had lots of comic work over the years. He's done Superman, he's done Wonder Woman, he's done plenty of stuff, but I think his biggest, most acclaimed mainstream work is Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Stu, I'm going to turn it over to you for your initial thoughts, but this is pretty much John Romita Jr., a favourite of ours.
Oh, he's absolutely one of my favourites.
On art and JMS on writing. Pretty much starts out, just to paint the picture for listeners, Spider-Man, Peter Parker is kind of like, he's like a substitute teacher, and Mary Jane is separated from him. She's like a actress model over in LA. So they're not divorced, but they are separated. And
yeah, and Spidey's kind of finding his feet again after what's been a...
Obviously been a rough patch. He says that at the start. But what I love about it is you get this feeling like there's a bit of a fresh start going on in the air. Aunt May still
you do. And I mean, this is the beginning of John Romita Jr.'s run as well, isn't it?
I believe John Romita Jr. may have done, I'm not 100% sure, but I think he may have done stuff on the run prior as well to this. I've never read the run prior to this. This is after they renumbered Spider-Man in sort of the late 90s.
Because I got the feeling this was more or less a complete refresh of the creative team.
It probably was. I don't even know. But definitely JMS is new.
Yeah.
And it had a real fresh feel, which is what I felt, coming into this comic. I felt like you could pick this up knowing the basics of Spidey and just get running.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. This was one of the earliest runs of Spider-Man that I've read. I read it years ago when I first really got into comics.
Sure.
And when you suggested it, I went, fine. JMS on Spidey, always a good pick.
Yep.
There's really no bad runs here.
More gold from Dave, basically. That's what you thought.
Some gold from Dave.
Finally, something.
I pick it up, and about three pages in, we hit Ezekiel.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And as soon as he comes up, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
It's a powerful story, isn't it, the Ezekiel story?
Such a great little run.
Yeah.
Ezekiel's a fantastic ally. Like, I would love to see more of him.
Even the hints you have of Ezekiel, of how he got the power, it's a much more of a, like, desperado adventurer kind of thing as opposed to he got bitten by a spider.
Yeah, exactly.
He went hunting for this shit.
Yeah. Yeah, like, he's been planning this where Peter's kind of stumbled into it.
Exactly.
There's no idea what he's doing.
And, I mean, I think JMS did a really good thing by using a soft reboot starting point, getting MJ in the picture but out of the picture at the same time. So it sort of frees up Peter to really be Spider-Man. And Ezekiel, he is a classic ally, and he reminded me of Indiana Jones turned sort of corporate. And I just think the way that he sort of conveys to Peter, whether you believe it or not, about, like, the power of the spider and all that kind of stuff. Like, it brings questions into Spider-Man's mind, which never have been there before.
Well, yeah, I mean, at the beginning he kind of has that age-old question, what happens, what was there first, the chicken or the egg? And this was...
Yeah.
Was it the radioactivity, or did the spider always have those powers? What?
Good question.
And it was kind of this stumbling point where Peter kind of realized that he's been looking at this with a very black and white view, that it was just a radioactive spider that bit him.
Which is what we all believe too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a cool way to reimagine a story that's so well known in comic book history, like we said before.
And he ties it into the action, because when this character of Morlun comes after him, who's kind of like an unstoppable force.
Yeah. And this is why I kind of want to see Morlun in a movie sometime.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I think he would really work.
Morlun they used in Spider-Verse.
Yes, they did.
Spider-Verse, they used the whole family.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I mean, I know you'd have to sort of, like, push the boat out there a long way from what we've seen so far, but I reckon it would make an awesome movie. It was pretty awesome on the TV show when they did it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, like, they did it in the animated very well. It was pretty intriguing. I actually thought Spider-Verse was one of my most favorite modern Spider-Man events I can ever remember. I thought Spider-Verse was really pretty good.
Yeah.
And look, so this JMS is the guy who started it. So, look, I mean, something I want to mention here, Stu, I've got here on my notes, there's an uncertainty and a restlessness in Peter. Without Mary Jane there, he's very much like a ship without a rudder, isn't he? He needs Mary Jane. You realise that when she's not there.
Yeah, but I think this gives him a chance to really explore what he wants to do.
True. Gives him a bit more room to breathe. But, like, you do get the impression, though, the love is there. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, Stu, I'm going to, you know, we can talk more and more about Morlun, who I agree with you was a fantastic villain. I love the concept of a villain that can't be stopped, and he can't even really run away from him. Morlun just keeps coming.
Yeah.
And JMS, without giving big spoilers, he does use that radioactivity well to sort of eventually,
absolutely,
you know, pay that off. Now, Stu, I want to turn to what I thought was one of the most landmark moments I've ever read in a Spider-Man comic. Yep. When I read this, I remember, because I read it in that book there when I got it. I hadn't read any JMS. I got it on recommendation. When I saw the moment where Aunt May discovers that Peter is Spider-Man, when she comes in basically after a huge fight with Morlun, I think it's just after he's just beaten him.
Yeah, and sees Peter just lying there.
Bloodied on the bed.
Absolutely.
With, I think, the leg still on, the suit, and the actual rest of the suit just on the floor. And she just comes in and sees him, and there's no doubt Peter is Spider-Man. And he suffered greatly for being Spider-Man. I always felt that's one of the most biggest moments I've ever read in any Spider-Man comic ever.
Oh, yeah. Like, that moment is up there with the death of Gwen Stacy.
It is.
In terms of just shattering what we knew about Spider-Man up to that point.
And you're like, wow, okay, like, this is going to change. This fundamentally is going to change something.
This fundamentally changes the way Spider-Man is going to act.
And, I mean, and it's handled so well. I mean, my God. People online, I think JMS has a pretty unpopular profile online for reasons that we don't need to go into, but I know nothing about the guy, but I can just say, as a storyteller, he had me in his hands during this volume, you know?
Yeah.
I was just like a puppet. Like, even when they do the conversation between May and Peter, you know, it was emotional.
Yeah.
Like, because I started realizing, like, Peter, like, loves Aunt May so much. Like, she's kind of like his mother, really, you know.
Oh, she's absolutely there, isn't
she? Yeah, like, and, you know, and she's older in this version than the version we see now in the movies. But he's been lying to her for, like, this long, for, like, 30 years, man.
Yeah, and from Peter's view, it's always been a protection thing.
Yeah,
he doesn't want May to know because he wants to protect her. Because
she'll just die of worry, sort of thing.
Well, yeah, and also, I think also with Peter, it's a case of, every time he's gotten close enough to someone and told them about it,
yeah,
it's gone downhill very quickly.
Sure. He's told plenty of people, though, in his span of Spider-Man. Plenty. There's a list, apparently, of, like, who knew Peter was Spider-Man at times. It's a massive list. But that said, I mean, regardless of the reasons why, James handles it so well that you sort of feel both sides of the view. And I felt sorry for Aunt May. And then I've always liked her, but of course... one of the moments I never forget in Spider-Man 2 is when she can't make rent. And I used to get so torn up. I used to be like, poor Aunt May. I'm so sad. But when she goes to the library and she's, like, reading up and she, like, cancels her Bugle subscription, etc. Yeah. You know? Because the thing is, in the comics I've read, to make kind of more funny, like, in comics how they like to exaggerate, like, she hated Spider-Man. JMS sort of tries to soften it a bit. Like, it gets mentioned. But, like, in many of the older comics I've read from the 80s, like, here and there, she actually hates Spider-Man with a passion.
Yeah.
You know, like, Spider-Man to her is, like, she kind of, like, will pay Adam Peter for being such close friends with him because, like, you know, no matter what Peter tries to do, he's actually linked to Spider-Man pretty closely, like, in his career. Like, a lot of the time he's taking pictures of Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's always been used to kind of show this internal conflict with Peter.
Yeah.
In that every time he tries to do something good, the Bugle obviously twists it.
Yeah.
Turning him into the villain. And Aunt May's just reading the Bugle thinking, oh, this Spider-Man's a, you know, menace to society.
And yet, ironically, loves Peter just so much.
Yeah, exactly.
Poor old Aunt May. I mean, I did feel for it, like, that, like, really frankly, it would be a big shock to, like, in this comic, she's pushing, like, 85, man. She's old. Dude. I mean, I can understand at 85 if I was if I'd lied to my aunt or my mother or whatever for that long, I'm not sure that at 85 I'd be, like, confessing that I'm Spider-Man at that point. Like, you've kept the secret that long. That's what makes it more powerful, actually.
Yeah.
In the movie where – oh, we can't do spoilers, can we?
No, we can't do spoilers.
And I didn't do any.
Came pretty close there, Dave.
It's so hard to remember, man. Like, fuck, seriously, like, honestly, just go watch the fucking movie, kids. Like, like, stop, like, making me try to remember everything in the whole world. But,
like, your own show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's my own show, exactly. But, anyway, getting back to this stupid. I did like, as well, though, like, we sort of got past, Morland's like the beginning. Bang. Big opening, dramatic opening, JMS putting his stamp on the property. Then you have the Aunt May thing. And then you segue into sort of, you do a bit more of the relationship between Peter and Mary Jane and sort of gradually start to reconcile. Am I right, Stu?
Yeah, and it kind of winds down slowly with the action. You end up getting less like Ezekiel and Morland type villains. You end up with Doc Ock and
Doc Ock.
Some lower level villains for him.
Yeah. It's almost like he wanted to take a bit of a break from the intensity, didn't he?
Yeah, and obviously this run continues past where we've read.
I think 5 volumes of them.
Yeah, so finishing volume 1, this is not the end of their story.
God, no.
And I said to you before, this feels like an odd place to finish this book.
Yeah, well, I think they just had to cut it at a certain point. Like,
yeah, I got a feeling they literally just went and split into 5.
Well, I think that's exactly it, yeah.
And I feel like had they split it into maybe 6... and we lost the last, say, 4 issues, 5 issues in this run, it would have been a much better complete story.
Sure.
Because it did start winding down towards the end, start talking about more of the relationship with MJ and how the distance wasn't working. And
they're married in this, aren't they? They're married. They're a married couple, but they're just going through a sort of separation, like...
Well, yeah, because she's got a job. Where was she? In Hollywood, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's an actress on a film.
Yeah.
I love that Mary Jane is like this model actress and stuff that she goes into. Like, it's so 80s they went that route, isn't it? Like, the glamour model sort of thing. Like, she used to be like the girl from next door.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of cool, man. I dig her. Like, as much as, like, I love Gwen Stacy with, like, all my heart and, like, can never get over that death, like... I've had to, because Mary Jane's such a cool character. Like, Mary Jane and Spider-Man are a package, dude. And I think, unfortunately, and I'll just bring this up on the show because I know there'll be some listeners out there who are familiar with Spider-Man. JMS's run ends with One More Day, which is the dissolution of the Mary Jane Peter Parker marriage. But that was editorially mandated. That was he's on record as like he was 100% against that. He was forced to do that by editors. And you know what? Like, give the guy a fucking break. Like, he like just in terms of this, like he wrote a lot of good Spidey. I mean, you know, things are out of your control as a writer sometimes. Like, editors are telling you to do one thing, and you do it, and you run ends. Well, look at the good stuff. I mean, we've read this volume, and I thought it was some of the best Spider-Man I've read ever. And I've read quite a bit of Spider-Man.
Yeah, you know? This is a great run with some great Spider-Man.
Got a question, Stu, because I don't remember too much of it after this first volume. I've really got to read through it. I've got all five volumes. And I've read volume two, but I'm hazy on the details. Does Venom ever turn up in JMS's run that you can remember? Is there any Venom stuff? Because I think that would be interesting.
I think so.
Yeah, I'd sort of be interested.
But like I said before, like, I remember that I've read this.
Yeah.
But until I saw Ezekiel and I was like, oh yeah, I remember this story now.
Yeah.
It kind of triggered, came in stages.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
For me.
It kind of sense memory almost, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I knew what was coming, but it wasn't, the details were a bit fuzzy.
One thing that this run becomes very famous for is him coming out to the public as Spider-Man, and so it entwines a lot with Civil War.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of this run too. It's all about... I'm sort of remembering now as I talk about it, when Mary Jane comes back to him, okay, you know, to live with him and stuff, like they're a fully proper married couple again, he actually has to go on the run because the government's hunting him because he's against... He starts out being on Tony's side of the Superhero Registration Act, and he comes out to the public and says, I'm Peter Parker, I'm Spider-Man. So he outs himself, and then due to the events of Civil War, he then sides with Captain America.
Yeah.
And he pays a consequence for outing himself as well. You know, there's a whole lot of stuff that happens in this run. It's quite a deep and complicated run. Like, it's pretty cool.
Look, it's a great run.
Yeah.
I'd strongly recommend really any JMS.
Yeah.
And John Romita Jr. pairing with Spider-Man.
Oh, got you.
But start at volume one.
Start at the beginning, man, so you get the full reference.
Yeah.
Because JMS really does write it like a novelist. He builds it.
He does, but he's got much... Unlike Nick Spencer, they're both good at storytelling.
Mm.
They're both good at it in the long form.
But JMS pays it off a lot quicker. And it's a lot more effective that way.
It is. The pacing keeps up.
Yeah. You're interested. It's a page-turner.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not like, oh, God, like we're still going through the same scene over 10 pages. Like, he keeps it going. And the art is, I got to be honest, Romita Jr. is great in these issues. Great.
Yeah.
He's knocking it out of the park, man. I also want to, we haven't mentioned it, but I have got on my notes here, the 9/11 issue we need to mention. It's powerful, dude, and remains so even at this distance of like over 15 years now, you know? Like, I'd forgotten it was in there, and it kind of is like a break from normal programming because, like, obviously 9/11 happened and they banded together and did it. I mean, I don't want to go on and on about 9/11 and everything, but, like, dude, even at this distance, just remembering, it took me back to the time period and just, it's, you know, we shouldn't go on too much about it other than I just want to say it's a landmark issue. You know?
Yeah.
And that can't have been easy to write, man. He was writing that in the, you know, and I know people died, you know what I'm saying, and everything. But even still, that would have been an emotional issue. Can you imagine writing and drawing that issue, man?
Yeah.
That would have been
a lot of comics had to do, I mean, a lot of things stopped when that happened.
Yeah.
When they came back, they had a memorial issue, more or less.
Sure.
I remember Cap's one was really moving.
It would be. And he's moving in this one.
Yeah.
Like, the Cap moment is what gets me in this one, where Spidey's like, and only he knows what it's like because he's been here before.
Yeah.
You know? And you just, like, these are fictional characters, but they can reach real emotions. You know?
Absolutely.
And, like, Spider-Man more than anyone, I think, at times, because he's such an everyman character. Like, he's your man on the street. You know, and when he conveys that with Cap, and the art is brilliant, I was like, fuck, man, like, this is bringing some shit back. I was, like, remembering, like, watching Conan when it happened, man, and Conan was just, like, distraught and, like, was almost like a therapy session watching it. Like, I was bringing back some vivid memories.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's best left in the past, I guess, but just inside a powerful collection of Spider-Man comics, that was a particularly powerful issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Stu, have you got anything more to say about JMS other than we're going to give Stu a bit of a break from my incessant picks, And because I picked probably about, like, out of the 18, I feel like I've picked about 16 of them. Stu had that one.
Most of them I haven't minded at all.
Yeah, you've ticked them off. You did have
most
your,
of them have been good.
You did have your one Cosmic Night where it was like Cosmic Forever or whatever the hell it was called. Like
Thanos in Paris. Yeah.
Cosmic one Forever. I call it Cosmic
one
Forever.
One of the greatest cosmic. Yeah, Cosmic of all time. Sure.
Also one of the most confusing. No, it was fun, Stu. I remember liking it. But
more Cosmic for next week, or do you want me to stick with my original pick?
Stu, I've got down here, I'll let you announce it. You've got something down here that I'm well and truly behind.
Yeah, I thought you might be. I've gone easy on you. So next we've got JLA The Nail.
Awesome.
So some very late 90s
classic
JLA
stuff,
for you.
Man. Yeah, Elseworlds. Can I give him the basic 98, pitch?
98 run, I think.
Oh, probably, yeah. That sounds about right. So you're going to give him the basic pitch?
Go for it, Dave.
Yeah, readers, like, honestly, you've just heard us go on about Amazing Spidey. This is JLA, like an Elseworlds tale, and the concept is so beautiful and so simple. It's that, like, a nail punctured the tyre, I believe, of Maran Pa Kent's car, so that they never got to wherever the rocket that Superman was in crash landed. And so basically, Superman is never picked up by Maran Pa Kent. So it's an Elseworlds tale where he's picked up by somebody else. That's pretty much it, isn't it, Stu?
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, it is such a good read. I actually remember buying it in the, the sort of trade paperback version in the day because it came out, I think, as one comic. Nice. Or at least I got it as one collection. And it's not even that big a read. It's from memory.
No, it's not a huge read.
Yeah, I mean, felt like reading the fucking Bible with JMS the Spidey. But no, and honestly, I recommend. I think you can get it on Comixology. I'm pretty sure you can. You can certainly get it in shops. Check it out. I'm looking forward to reviewing it, Stu. Great pick.
Yeah, I thought you'd be happy with that kind of.
And so you've got
middle ground.
You wrote a couple, man. You wrote a couple. So, you know, like, don't be afraid if we have to read Thanos, you know.
If we have to, if we get to.
Thanos Infinity or whatever it's going to be called.
Okay.
The Infinity fucking, you know, Eternity. Anyway. Dave. So, look, listeners.
Sorry for you.
Oh, that's okay, Stu. And you shouldn't, buddy. I'm fine. And for all my...
Sitting in the corner with Punisher.
For all my whining, I'm fine. now, listeners, I do want to say, actually, Stu, we are up to over 1,050 likes on our Facebook page.
Yeah, hit a milestone.
Yeah, I said we were closing on 1,000 and then it just rocketed up this week. Our Punisher issue last week was popular. And it was.
It means we have to do more Punisher, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And Stu, we've got a lot of listeners in the States. Yeah, that are fantastic. Coming. It's great. And look, I love you guys. And always reach out to us through the Facebook page, or you can email signaldoom@gmail.com.
Yeah, write in. Let us know what you want us to review, if there's anything that you need.
Exactly.
Kind of confirmation on, something that you and your friends argue over.
What are they coming to us for confirmation? What of? Facts. Just like...
What's better, maybe?
Oh, I thought you just wanted me to, like, solve their disputes. I can. I'm happy to step in.
Yeah, as long as it's comic book related, vaguely.
I'm happy to go just genuine.
Well, there you go. Dave's offering conflict resolution.
Conflict resolution.
Conflict resolution with Dave. Just write him. Yep.
Don't
expect much.
I was going to say, don't think I'm going to be able to solve world peace or anything. Like, you know, we're going to take a sort of from the ground up approach. It could get worse before it gets better is what I'm trying to say. You know, you can't make it on without breaking a few eggs.
I like that you've already given up on this idea of conflict resolution.
You can't make it on without breaking a few eggs. Sometimes it's best to walk away from a bad relationship. There you go. There's stuff like that. That's the kind of wisdom I've got, you know. You can't love others without loving yourself first, and I've got that covered.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I've always been fine with that. And other stuff along those lines. So,
yeah, so if you want that or other pearls of wisdom from Dave... Right in. See what happens.
Yep. Okay. Well, I think we've covered everything. Obviously, you can follow me at RedLantern2051. Also, I want to say a big thanks to people who picked up DeMorn's Soulfighter, my new book, last week. It had a good week at the sales, actually. So you can always pick that one up on Amazon. Stu, any other tidbits over there, big guy?
No. Thanks for the support, guys. Keep it coming.
Keep it coming. We've crossed over the 1,000 mark.
Yeah. Look, Dave and I are still enjoying this. So you guys are, we're going to keep going.
I'll go past their enjoyment. Like, I'll drive this into the ground. Like, you know.
That's really great to know as a co-host. When you've got a co-host that's willing to just drop this thing down to the ground level. That's
look, that's, I mean,
super reassuring, Dave.
Popularity will come and ghost you, but if you put out a consistent quality product, they'll keep coming back. Like, it's like the, it's like we do the news, Stu. People tune into the news every night. You know what I'm saying?
That's very true, Dave.
And I just keep on, well, I'll keep on going, man, with the news. You know what I'm saying? There's always news.
Till there's just one listener.
That will never happen, Stu. We are growing. We are expanding. We love you very much. We'll see you next week, guys, for, what is it called, Stu? JLA the Nail. Good night.